Good morning, Minister and Deputy Minister. Welcome. Honorable Nkosi, Honorable Mikolakis, Honorable Bartlett, Honorable Sebeku, Honorable Motsamai. Okay. And I think other members will probably also be joining us, but given that it is 9 o'clock, and this is a briefing, I propose that we start with this meeting, Mr. Deputy Minister, as well as the we did engage Financial Year's Budget and APP jointly with the select with the Portfolio Committee on Police. But as the National Council is representing provinces and our mandate is to ensure that provincial interests are taken into account in the national sphere of government, as stated in Section 42, Subsection 4 of the Constitution. But we also contribute to and local concerns that are recognized in national policy making, and that provincial, local, and national governments work together. We also would be having presence in this meeting. On other specific areas, in addition to education, on monitoring of the efficacy of the forensic science laboratories, such crowd control, especially in terms of the interim policy provision, an update as well in terms of the community as well as the exposed to and.
I'm Chair, good morning, honourable members. Chair, I guess you said to. Okay. Good morning. Chairperson, we by the direction of His Excellency, the departments will have to His Excellency the formal way this time. Is even in the your I do avail myself most of the times when there are the meetings, when you invite the meetings and all that, and then there'll be element some in the police, like a program one, which will be mostly administration we deal with. So maybe he makes the first input on the question of the secretariat before the, that is more good. So I'll request through you that we request the deputy minister to
with the police and present both the secretariat and IP, though I'm at 11. But it will be appropriate that one also indicator appointed who will be appearing before you with us, I think, for the first time, mentor thing. But I must also make note that we are having court challenges around the processes towards the appointment of the executive director by the Helen Suzman Foundation. We are currently preparing responding affidavit to court with the parliament, the standing committee, the portfolio committee led by Honorable Dina Jumat as the chair, is cited in that matter as the first respondent and ourselves as the police. So it's a matter that is on court and we are defending that the yeah, done in that. That being said, secretary for the police, you know, he always says to me, it is secretary for the police. It's him and the team that is going to lead in the presentation that we are going to have about the budget for the police. And I think the necessary arrangement has been made with regard to those relevant people who are supposed to interact with you, because indeed you are correct that the NCOP is a platform where in provinces and local municipalities get to interact with the politics of the country, and therefore, you know, merging the two with the portfolio committee sometimes becomes very difficult for yourself to do the work that you are supposed to do, and it's quite reasonable and understand. Make us created the specific intention and purpose that they must, their mandate is separate from the other tier of parliament, and that we should acknowledge that in as we carry out our work ourselves as a police and yourself as a portfolio committee and interact with you. We should be conscious that we are interacting with provinces, and therefore our presentation in an approach must be tailored in such a manner that the approach must be tailored in such a manner that they talk to that particular reality. And I'm quite to ask you, Minister, you will then may interact with the chair, because when you accordingly communicate through that particular line of interacting. Thank you. Over to you, Minister.
Chair is the chief today. When we are chair is the chief. For the question of the legal challenges, chair are taking us to Concord with really something that is useless. We believe we'll go. ED is there, and let me take this opportunity, Chair, of submitting myself to you that I might request to leave at 11 problems. The PM will go and come back, but I have some emergency in one of the provinces. But to the Secretariat to give us, to take us forward. We have discussed the matters, and they have taken on board the element of local and province. As we know, that this body, we were fine to hear.
Thank you, Minister and Deputy Minister. Mr. Teha.
Thank you very much, Minister, Deputy Minister, and thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I don't know, I'll get your guidance if, Chair, you would like us to introduce those who are attending. All the provinces represented. Their HODs, a long list of people. I'll just introduce the person who will take us through the presentation, which is Itumeleng Moagili Dwaba. And if you would like me to introduce everyone, I will do that. Can I just wait for your guidance on that?
The first engagement. Perhaps give us an indication of who is present. I know the virtual platform is very difficult to see everybody, but I think even all responses are given, then I'm sure we'll get to know individuals are present better. But for now, perhaps just give us an indication of who is present and then give us to.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I will start with the provincial departments from the Eastern Cape, the HOD, Mr. Mapodisa, It's here from the HOD. It's here. It says Mr. Mutakati. But I think we'll need to confirm, because I was told that it has changed that name. In Gauteng, we've got the acting HOD, Mr. Tanje Kwayo, Mr. Gumbi, presented by the acting secretary, Mr. Kupape. The Mpumalanga is represented by Ms. Twala, who is the acting head of the provincial secretariat. Northwest, the HOD, Ms. Mufukeng. Northern Cape, the chief director, Ms. B. Omar, who is the chief director, policy and research, advocate Bell, chief director, legislation development, Duli, Ms. Kongman, who is the director. The presentation, we have divided it into three areas. There's the section that just deals with the high level budget of our performance plan and our mandates of the civilian sectors of the that you indicated that we need to now hand over to Ms. Mwaki to take us through the presentation, Honorable.
Trying to load the presentation from my side, but it seems that I am unable to. It is here. Okay. From my side, I am unable to see it. Okay. Thank you very much. As the Secretary for Police Service indicated, I will be taking the meeting through the presentation. So I will go straight into the overview of the 2021-2022 budget and MTE special adjustments a process. These budgets, that there is a clear downward trend in terms of our allocation over the three-year MPF period. And we also have been given only a marginal increase in terms of our goods and services. So that will lie our ability to execute talking to during the presentation. Tipperson, in terms of our mandate, as you see on the slide, is reflected as articulated in section 2. Similarly, our legislative and policy mandate also remains the same, with the inclusion of the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act, which was assented into law. Chairperson, in terms of our institutional policies and strategies governing the five-year planning period, as you had indicated in your letter that we need in our priorities, these are the policies and strategies that will be governing our priorities over the five-year period. Obviously, with the implementation of the Integrated Crime and Violence Prevention Strategy. We will be also looking at addressing the need for a localized approach to crime concerns, and it will also assist us in terms of targeted implementation of provincial and local crime prevention frameworks, which is in line with government's district development model. In terms of the professionalization of the police service, we would be looking also at beefing up the detective services through various capacity building programs and the forensic services as well as facilitating the modernization of the police service through an e-policing policy, which has been approved and finalized in the previous financial year. And lastly, we will also be facilitating implementation of our partnership strategy and framework, which specifically seeks to mobilize our key role players and harness the social capital in our communities by facilitating that greater involvement of community safety structures in the fight against crime. In terms of our key achievements for the previous financial year, Chairperson and colleagues and honorable members, you will know that we were, like other departments, affected by the generalized impact of COVID-19 in the previous financial year. And we even had to review some of our targets that were affected by the lockdown restrictions. And these targets emanate from specifically our Program 2, Program 3, and Program 4, respectively, where you will find the concentration of our people-centered mandate in terms of those particular programs. But in spite of these challenges, we managed to record some key achievements, amongst which include the development and approval of our recruitment, selection, and retention strategy, with a particular focus to reducing the vacancy rate. We also developed the change management strategy and operations management framework in order to improve our business processes and operational efficiencies. We conducted anti-crime campaigns as well as a proactive approach to the current situation on crime and GBV in the country. And this was also done in support of the fight against COVID-19. In spite of the challenges that were brought about by COVID-19, some of these campaigns we utilized technological platforms to conduct. Similarly, with the capacity building sessions that we conducted with all provinces on the Detective Services Project, we continued with our monitoring of the Domestic Violence Act compliance and responsibilities of FAT. And we conducted community awareness campaigns in provinces as well to raise awareness on the role, on the our oversight role in monitoring the DVA implementation and the responsibilities of the police service. Chairperson, although we could not conduct a field work in terms of our normal research work, we then refocused our work in terms of desktop research, and we produced research briefs on a number of topical issues, including trends analysis on SAPS assault and torture discipline cases, a five-year trends analysis on TRIO crimes, and SAPS discipline management related to misconduct cases of lost or stolen state firearms. And a noticeable achievement was also the publication of the South African Police Service Amendment Bill in the Gazette for public comments. Chairperson, we also thought it prudent to then highlight some of the factors contributing to the performance of policy and our envisaged response in this regard, given that collectively as a government, we're striving to be more proactive and circumspect in our response and in our approach and our response to overcoming this crisis. So some of the factors that we have highlighted include, as you mentioned in your introduction, Chairperson, the impact of COVID-19 on the economy, the impact of COVID-19 also on the socioeconomic conditions such as poverty, unemployment, and inequality, conditions which are likely to increase crime and criminality in our communities. We also looked at police responses to the crisis. We mentioned in our situational analysis as well in terms of the cases of police brutality that emanated, particularly during the early stages of the lockdown. And last but not least, the budget cuts, which have hit us particularly hard when it comes to increasing our capacity as a secretariat. I mentioned when I spoke to the budget in terms of the downward trend on the compensation of employees allocation over the medium term. So Chairperson, we are saying that if we are to achieve our envisaged impact over the five-year period in order to build safer communities in line with the National Development Plan, we'll have to adequately respond to the following issues. Realigning our policy orientation and strategic focus to contribute towards the national priority of halving crime, violent crime within 5 years, and linked to the NDP vision of all people living in South Africa being safe and enjoying a community life free of fear. We also need to enhance the role of oversight in contributing to resolving some of the burning issues that we see in the country, for example, the flare-ups that we noticed took place in Normandy and Senegal, and also leveraging on the social capital and facilitating greater engagement and involvement of our communities in this regard, which would help to serve as an early warning system of some of these issues that flare up. We will also be focusing on tangible ways to strengthen police service delivery and enable staffs to become more effective. And then in order to do this, we need to determine how, as a secretariat, we will implement, promote, and align our national and provincial operations in this regard. And at the time of tabling our plans, we were engaged in discussions with some of our provincial counterparts in terms of signing service level agreements, Chairperson, in terms of taking some of the responsibilities that would have been done by CSP officials in provinces. And also ensuring alignment of our plans with some of the normative framework of government, including the district development model, the national strategic plan on gender-based violence and femicide and other issues. Of critical importance, Chairperson, is the monitoring of the implementation of the Minister's Programme of Action, which emanates from the 2019 crime retreats, and also improving collaboration between ourselves and our provincial counterparts to address capacity requirements in this regard. Last but not least, we also need to focus on fully implementing the reforms that are proposed by the White Paper on Policing, which includes repositioning and capacitating the Secretariat to enable it to fully perform its oversight mandate. Chairperson, obviously the budget cuts that we've experienced would have an impact on the extent to which we can implement these reforms. In terms of our priorities and Chairperson, taking into account those factors that we have discussed, our contribution to the COVID-19 service delivery environment, and our strategic focus over the medium term, our emerging priorities include the finalization and implementation of some of our key policy instruments towards the professionalization of SAPS. This includes the e-policing policy, the integrated crime and violence prevention strategy, conducting research on whether SAPS is achieving its constitutional mandate. This is one of the issues that emanated from the crime retreat, which took place in 2019. Also in line with the NDP proposal on strengthening the criminal justice system through cooperation amongst all the departments in the justice, crime prevention and security cluster, we will also be participating in the JCPS cluster restructuring process to enable effective implementation of policy and improving service delivery. I mentioned the monitoring and reporting on the Minister's Program of Action from the Crime Retreat. We will be continuing with our normal oversight work and producing those reports. We will also be continuing with awareness campaigns in terms of the role of SAPS in monitoring the domestic violence in the Domestic Violence Act implementation. And in line with the medium-term strategic framework priority, we will be conducting a community satisfaction survey in order to measure public perceptions in terms of the performance of police. We will be continuing with our GBV campaigns in partnership with some of our civil society partners. And in terms of organizational efficiencies, we will be implementing our human capital strategy and ICT strategy. So now in terms of our performance, I would just like to indicate that for 2021-2022, we now have a total number of 26 output indicators and corresponding targets in comparison to the 29 indicators that we had in the previous annual performance plan. And this talks to how we are trying to respond to the changing service delivery environment by being more focused in our approach, but also trying to respond in terms of the budget cuts. The reduction in the indicators also takes into account the fact that the integrated crime and violence prevention strategy was finalized in the previous financial year and then will serve as the implementing tool for the white paper on safety and security. So this then effectively removes two indicators from our program three, and an additional indicator has also been merged in our program four, which takes us down to 26 output indicators. So Chairperson, in terms of program one, administration, here we will, program one will have six output indicators and corresponding targets. We will continue to measure our performance in terms of the consultative forum with IPIDG. And Chairperson, in the previous joint sitting, the committee had asked, why do we measure the number of meetings that we hold with IPID? The importance of this particular indicator is the fact that the forum facilitates that closer cooperation between the Secretariat and the IPID as we discuss issues relating to trends in terms of SAPS performance recommendations and the implementation of such recommendations. And it also serves to also strengthen the oversight machinery within the policing environment. We will continue to measure our vacancy rate and the implementation of our two operational strategies. And in terms of finance, we will be measuring the payments made to creditors within 30 days and expenditure in relation to our budget allocation. And then moving on to program two, Chairperson. Program two will also have six output indicators and corresponding targets. And the work that we will be doing in terms of program two includes supporting the Minister of Police in terms of his public participation program through Izimbizo. And we will also be focused in particular in terms of implementation of our partnership strategy and framework. In terms of Program 3, Chairperson, Program 3 will have 4 output indicators and corresponding targets, which includes the drafting of a national policing policy in line with the constitutional obligation placed on the Minister of Police to develop a national policing policy. We will be conducting research in conjunction with our provincial counterparts and producing our annual Safer Spaces newsletter. This also includes the 2 bills that will be submitted to the Minister of Police for cabinet approval in this financial year. Moving on to Program 4, Chairperson. Program 4 has 10 output indicators and corresponding targets. I won't go through all the 10 output indicators, Chairperson, but just to indicate that the primary focus of Program 4 would be the monitoring of the implementation of the crime retreat resolutions, as I indicated. They will also be in terms of monitoring the implementation and compliance to legislation, looking at the implementation of the Child Justice Act and the implementation of the SAPS Employee Health and Wellness Program. And then in terms of our evaluation, I had indicated that this year we will be focusing on implementing our MTSF target in terms of the Community Perception Survey in line with priority on increased police visibility and improving trust in the police. And then in terms of the assessments, we will be focusing on the detective training program, which includes the general training program and the establishment of the academy. Chairperson, so the latter part of our presentation then deals with those additional issues that you had indicated in your introduction, which talks to our provincial the provincial budget allocations, DVA compliance, impact of COVID, monitoring SAPS misconduct, our response to GBV, the efficacy of the forensic science laboratories, the issue of the SAPS crowd control, and the update on CPF functionality. So, Chairperson, by way of introduction, our Act makes provision for the establishment of provincial secretariats in order to support the work of civilian oversight. And these provinces are required to align their mandates accordingly. So this takes into account and is in line with Section 206 of the Constitution, which provides provincial executives with certain powers and functions when it comes to police oversight. So provincial secretariats are mandated to carry out police station oversight to monitor police performance, monitor police conduct and investigate complaints, conduct research, conduct crime prevention initiatives, and facilitate strengthening of community police relations. Chairperson, so some of the work that we do with provinces includes the joint research project, the implementation or facilitating rather the implementation of the white paper on safety and security, compiling reports on court watch briefs, complaints management, IPID recommendations, monitoring the DVA compliance, and compiling assessment reports on some of the programs of SAPS. Chairperson, also just to mention that thus far, KZN, Gauteng Province, Free State and Western Cape have fully established provincial secretariats, while the other 5 provinces have not as yet established provincial secretariats, although they do have a chief directorate with a dedicated budget, which then performs the operations that are aligned to the secretariat mandate. In terms of the provincial budget allocations, for the 2021-2022 financial year, collectively, the budget for provincial secretariats comes to a total of 914.9 million, Chairperson. I just want to indicate, Chairperson, that when we presented to the joint sitting of the Portfolio Committee and Select Committee last year in May, we indicated that there's a clear imbalance in terms of the budgeting process of reactive law enforcement versus proactive prevention and safety. And this imbalance is glaring in terms of what you see in this regard. SAPS as an institution receives a budget of approximately 100 billion per annum to deal with law enforcement In fact, their budget for 2021-2022 is 96.3 billion, while you see provincial departments of community safety who deal with the implementation of preventative safety measures receives only a tenth of that allocation. Chairperson, now moving on to the monitoring of DV.
Are you complaining to
me? No, Minister, I was just highlighting the differences between the capacity and resources in terms of policing oversight and law enforcement. Minister, may I proceed? Chairperson?
Yes, it was just a passing comment.
Okay, thank you, Minister. Okay, Chairperson, so in terms of our Act, we are responsible for monitoring and evaluating SAPS's implementation of compliance with the Domestic Violence Act and also providing biannual reports to Parliament in this regard. So in fulfilling this mandate, we conduct police station monitoring visits. We've also established a national DVA compliance forum with SAPS, which is also something that's replicated in the provinces. And we also conduct joint capacity building work sessions with SAPS and provincial secretariats in order to facilitate effective implementation of the Domestic Violence Act. We then also utilize the DVA monitoring tool to conduct quality assessments on DVA compliance and to also identify problem areas for intervention in order to improve the services that's rendered by SAPS in this regard. So every 5 years, Chairperson, a census is conducted in order to develop a comprehensive database on the performance of SAPS at police station level in terms of various functional areas. Most recently, a census was conducted in 2018-19, where the focus was on the implementation of and compliance to laws and policies such as the DVA. So in terms of the census. Oh, so the census is conducted every 5 years. So in between the census, then police station monitoring is focused on the specific police stations that have a low level of compliance. And the aim here is to assist those police stations to improve their performance by monitoring the implementation of the recommendations that we make and assisting them to also develop improvement plans. So during such periods, the provinces then select 25% of these police stations, which includes the top 30 high GBV areas. So based on the 2018-19 census, the compliance level of police stations is categorized in terms of four areas, in terms of four levels rather. So level one, in terms of full compliance, is equivalent to 100%. Level two, which is significant compliance, is equivalent to between 70% and 99%. Level three, which is partial compliance, is equivalent to 50% to 69%. The fourth level, which is non-compliance, is equivalent to 49% and below. So, Chairperson, you'll see of the 1,143 police stations that were assessed, 29, a total of 21 or 1.84% had full compliance, and a total of 12 of those police stations were level four, which is non-compliance, or 1.05% of the total. So there are three key aspects in terms of addressing those areas of non-compliance. So the DVA Act and the national instruction requires that the police report all instances of non-compliance to ourselves so that we can make recommendations in terms of the remedial actions to be undertaken. So whenever this non-compliance is reported, we then make a recommendation for SAPS to institute disciplinary measures in this regard. Furthermore, provincial departments of community safety are empowered by the Constitution to also investigate any complaints in terms of inefficiencies against the police. So those are the measures that we take in terms of addressing non-compliance. On the impact of COVID-19 on resourcing and vacancies, I had indicated, Chairperson and members, in my in the earlier part of the presentation, that we were all affected by the budget cuts, which also affected our overall resources and it affected our mandates in terms of conduct the ability to conduct our planned oversight visits. The lockdown regulations and the guidelines that were provided by the Department of Public Service and Administration also had an impact in terms of the overall service delivery, productivity, as well as some of the projects that we had undertaken to do. Given that we were required to reduce the number of employees that are physically present at the workplace to 50%, I had indicated it also affected the slow pace of recruiting and filling of vacancies within the secretariat. In terms of provinces indicated that they did not experience any serious negative impact on resources as a result of COVID-19. However, some of the provinces generally have insufficient resources to begin with in terms of their monitoring and evaluation capacity. And the budget cuts will also affect negatively impact on the ability of provincial secretaries to increase their human capacity. So in order to ensure that we continue with the work that we need to do, we indicated that we will explore alternative methods of interacting with the police and with communities by way of leveraging on technology and also conducting limited number of visits by provincial secretaries in adherence to the current disaster management or lockdown regulations. Chairperson, on the monitoring of SAP's misconduct, here we have spoken to two issues, which is the IPID recommendations and also the strategy in terms of reducing civil claims against the police. So in terms of the IPID recommendations, the IPID Act requires SAPS to initiate disciplinary proceedings within 30 days of receiving recommendations made by the IPID. So both IPID and SAPS submit information on a monthly basis to the Secretariat in terms of these recommendations and the progress made in terms of implementation. So the consultative forum that I had spoken to earlier is where some of these issues are discussed. In order to monitor implementation of these recommendations and follow up on instances where these recommendations have not been implemented, we have established the IPID recommendations compliance forums, which meets also on a monthly basis, which is participated by members of SAPS and IPID. The forum also looks at discrepancies in terms of the implementation statistics between what is reported by SAPS and what is reported by IPID. Amongst others, I had indicated that the forum meets on a quarterly basis. They discuss the initiation of those disciplinary actions that are required to be taken by SAPS. And when necessary, SAPS is also invited to the meeting or to these forums rather to account on issues of non-implementation of recommendations. We also conduct oversight visits as well to provincial offices to interact with our key stakeholders and follow up on where the blockages are in terms of implementation. So in terms of the status of SAPS compliance with implementation of IPID recommendations, between April 2020 and March 2021, a total of 706 recommendations were made by the IPID, and 640 of these resulted in disciplinary proceedings being initiated. 18 of these disciplinary proceedings had not been initiated given that members were discharged, and 28 of these no measures or rather disciplinary proceedings had not been initiated. And some of the reasons that are provided for the non-implementation of recommendations are cited as follows. So members act claiming that they act within their scope, witnesses withdrawing their statements, and insufficient evidence produced. So Chairperson, this slide is merely an illustration of the numbers that I have given, that a total of 706 recommendations had been received and the measures that had been taken as well to address these recommendations. On the strategy to reduce civil claims against the police, We had conducted studies to assess trends in relation to civil claims and also to identify critical areas that require the attention of SAPS management. So in the study, the main causes or root causes of civil claims were identified. We also spoke to the amount spent by SAPS on civil claims. We identified those particular police stations that contribute the most to civil claims and the predominant law firms that carry out these claims. So arising from these studies, there were recommendations that were made to SAPS on how to manage civil claims against the police and how to improve the particular systems that are in place. Subsequently, SAPS is in the process of implementing the following. So their legal services within SAPS have started to recover losses as a result of gross negligence. They've developed a strategy on civil claims and litigation with clear standardized indicators and targets in terms of how to measure progress in terms of implementation. Preliminary investigation on letters of demand are conducted before seeking legal opinions, and an SOP has also been developed in terms of managing the backlog on civil claims and litigation. So as a secretariat, we will continue then to assist by monitoring the management of litigation and the implementation of the above recommendations by SAPS. Chairperson, you had also requested that we need to explain how we give effect to the government priority of fighting GBV and femicide in our budget. So we are saying that both the Secretariat and our provincial counterparts have catered for GBV programs as part of funds allocated for monitoring and evaluation and social crime prevention efforts. So we have prioritized the following: the continuous monitoring of SAPS compliance and implementation of the Domestic Violence Act, as I have alluded to, oversight of the top 30 police stations with high level of GBV-related crimes reported, that's nationally and in each province. And the focus will be on assessing the GBV response by frontline police officials through the levels of compliance to DVA and implementation thereof, measures that are in place to enhance police response and the effectiveness of those response measures. We will also be looking at the availability and suitability of private interviewing spaces or victim-friendly rooms, responses to complaints relating to the poor responses of GBV-related cases, and the resourcing of FCF units servicing the top 30 police stations. Through our oversight program, we'll be conducting or compiling those court watch briefs to identify systemic issues that lead to the withdrawal of GBV cases, with a focus on the responsibilities placed on the police, and we will be continuing with our awareness campaigns. And then, Chairperson, in implementing our partnership strategy and framework, we will also continue to work with institutions of higher learning and TVET colleges to implement programs that deal with campus safety for students through collaboration with a number of our key stakeholders. Chairperson, so an assessment on the effectiveness of the forensic science laboratories was conducted over a span of two financial years, which is 2019 and 2020, and 2020-21. So it was in two phases. So through this assessment, we identified some of the challenges within the FCL, and we have been monitoring progress that have been made in addressing some of these challenges. So on the slide in front of you, we have just highlighted a few of those challenges. In terms of the backlog, we are saying that the backlog at the biology unit at the end of the previous financial year was at 109%. And this was due to the unavailability of reagents or consumables, PPEs, and the unavailability of buccal sample collection kits. So in terms of the progress that has been made, the procurement processes to address some of the backlogs are currently in progress. The contract for those kits have been awarded. However, there needs to be validation and training before these kits can be utilized. The tender for the procurement of the buccal sample collection kits was also awarded in late 2019, and the collection of the samples is in progress by the detectives. The analysis of the sample is still, however, limited due to the fact that those procurement processes are currently underway. And then the other main challenge was the unavailability of the track and trace system, which was no longer in use due to a contractual dispute by the service provider. So the lab then had to revert to a manual system to identify exhibits. So by way of progress, due to our oversight monitoring, we have identified the following. So the FEM system has been developed and was deployed in April this year. The system, it still has a few teething programs and these problems, and these are being addressed by SAPS in collaboration with CETA. And the system is currently used for case registration while also gradually trying to move it into other processes. So the data that was on the previous system has now been transferred to the new system. Chairperson, in terms of the SAPS crowd control or the interim policy provisions, in 2011 and 2018, respectively, the Secretariat developed policies that served to guide SAPS in their operations and particularly with a focus on crowd management. This includes policy and guidelines on policing of public protests, gatherings, and major events. That's the 2011 policy. And the 2018 policy and guidelines on the professional use of force. In addition to the development of these policies, we also undertook research on the demilitarization of SAPS tactical response teams and public order policing units, as well as visible policing. And this was in response to the Marigana incident and some of the lessons that had been learned from that particular incident. And the recommendations from these particular studies were handed over to SAPS management for implementation. So in terms of the SAPS Act, the amendments to both the SAPS Act and the Regulation of Gatherings Act will give effect to those recommendations that are included in the Falun Commission of Inquiry and Panel of Experts report. Chairperson, lastly, on the update of community policing forum functionality. So there are a total of 1,159 CPF structures established in the 1,160 police stations, with one police station in the Northwest not having established a CPF. So of the 1,159, a total of 250 CPFs were assessed as at December 2020, and 11 of these were found to not have been functional. Chairperson, I think that then brings us to the end of our presentation. I submit. Thank you.
Thank you, Ma'am Wati and Mr. Teha. Minister, if you can bear my indulgence, I'm going to, given the time constraints between yourself and the 15 minister, I'm going to request that members could perhaps just ask their questions and or make comments on the presentation so that we don't miss you or the deputy minister in this process. If that is okay with you, Minister, or would you want to make some closing remarks on the presentation?
Thanks, Chair. We can listen to members on the comments and questions and some clarification, Chair.
Thank you, Minister. Honourable members, it's now your turn. If you have any comments, any questions that you would like to raise, I currently see two hands, but let me start with Honourable Mikolakis for now, and as members raise hands to continue. And I see Danamela, your hand is on up as well. So yeah, Honourable Mikolakis.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, Minister, Deputy Minister, and everyone present. Chairperson, I just have one question, and that is that we've heard that there were some budget cuts like in every other department, which is currently quite understandable. But just in terms of practical terms, what is the effect of the budget cuts on the department's operations? We've now seen the documentation, but it looks a bit different sometimes in practice. What will the effect be on your operations? Where will you have to cut that will seem to be a bit difficult? And how have you tried to limit those difficulties presented by this challenge. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Vikulakis. Honourable Nkosi, I see Honourable Zanamara's hand is not up anymore. So let me take Honourable Nkosi. I'll check this. Honourable Nkosi?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Greetings to your good self, the Minister and the Deputy Minister, members of the committee. Chair, I've got a few questions with me here. First question is reflecting on slide 5, strategic focus of facilitating the modernization of SAPS through an e-policing policy. What does this entail and how will you overcome challenges of information and communication technology, especially in rural areas where there is no broad band coverage? The other question, Chair, that I have is reflecting also in slide 9. The joint meetings between CSP and IPED, which is four per year, the committee will be interested in understanding some of the tangible achievements that they have come out of these meetings and what challenges are arising from this meeting and what follow-ups are being conducted in respect of the meetings. And also, what are the tangible achievements arising from these meetings? On slide 10, Chairperson, the indicator for the implementation of the human capital strategy aims at to improve organizational performance and efficiency. How will this be achieved and how will be the separate aspects of organizational performance and efficiency be measured? The other question that I have that would like to have more details on the ICT framework. Has the framework been approved and to what degree has the framework has been implemented to date? What challenges are experienced in the implementation of the framework? Has the department had any challenges with other departments, such as CETA and the DPW? The last question that I have with me, Chair, that I would like to know, on slide 24, DVA compliance based on the 2018-2019 census, the compliance levels of police stations, 12 non-compliant. What are the main reasons for non-compliance in police stations? Thank you, Chairperson. I submit.
Thank you, Honourable Nkosi. Honourable Zanamara.
No, thanks, Chairperson. It's just one question on the GBV. We actually would have loved to see the breakdown. How is the department going to go about in bringing the statistics of GBV down? Because in the areas like in Mpumalanga and Witbank, we see the increase there. If the department can perhaps maybe explain to the committee, what is it that they are doing to bring the numbers down of GBV, especially in areas like Witbank, Malahleni, as I said. If they can maybe perhaps give us that breakdown. And what is it that they are doing? Because the numbers are increasing, and how effective is their plan in terms of making sure that we bring the numbers of GBV down? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Bandamela. Honourable Fisher.
And thank you for a very in detailed
Okay, I'm not sure if it's just myself, but I cannot hear her as though her screen is frozen. Maybe then let me ask, I see Honourable Filippo, your hand is up. Perhaps if you could speak in the meantime till we get Honourable Filippo back.
Good morning to the Minister, Deputy Minister, and to the officials. My apologies for my camera. Chair, just on a point of clarity, if you look in terms of the indicator for the implementation of the human capital strategy, which aims to improve organizational performance and efficiency, my question basically is just how will this be measured, and how is the department going to measure that? That is one question. And also, Chair, in terms of the integrity, when it comes to the police officers, has the department made some progress in that regard for the police when it comes to their integrity? Because you always find when you go to our police stations, the manner in how they deal with the public, you know, a lot has to be desired, and they abanabund. So umuntu ufuna ukwazi ukuthi umphathiswa nesebe lakhe into ona bayenza ukwenzela ukuthi abantu xa benengxaki beyo reporter, especially gender based violence, that badibana nabantu abanovelwano, abantu abangazuba phatha ngendlela engafanelekanga ngoba apho basuka khona imekwa zilunganga, kodwa intetha uzivayo ekuhlaleni sisafumana namhlanje amapolisa baphatha abantu bethu ngendlela engafanelekanga. Yintoni isebe okanye icandelo lamapolisa eliyenzayo uqinisekisa ukuthi abantu abazokwenza ii-cases kwezi police stations zethu baphathwa ngendlela efanelekileyo, ingakumbi abantu abangoomama? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable
Filippo. Honourable
Filippo,
are you back?
Yes,
sorry. Yes. Honourable, can you hear me? Am I audible? Okay. Sorry for that. It was something, a glitch that I couldn't control. I am just very concerned this morning because I do not know if the police, the Minister of Police and the top structure are in any way informed of what is going on in rural towns and in terms of rural safety. The towns are now in such a state, it is a war, and police stations are refusing to open cases. They say it's petty things, but people are stabbed in the streets of towns in Northwest. They are, ladies, when they get out of their vehicles, are being attacked with shamboks and grabbed everything that they can about that, and nothing has been done about that. It's a cases of about 18 to 20 per day. It's not a singular or isolated incident. It's continuing there, and it has been reported several times to the structures, and nothing has happened. No police are there to protect people. In fact, they are at this stage assisting this crime to continue. And I want to have the budget to speak also to that that's happening on across the field.
Okay, thank you, Honourable
Sister.
I think Northwest is also represented in this meeting. Perhaps they can also shed some light on that question. Just from my side, Honourable Minister, I just have a few questions as well. I think in terms of the key achievements that are reflected on slide 6 of the presentation, the report on the Domestic Violence Act compliance monitoring, as well as the issue around the research brief that I've been produced and the slide outlines those various areas. I think we'd be very interested in terms of getting these documentation. But I'd also like to know that I'm sure that some of the documents make recommendations. And I'd like to know from the side of the CSP, whether they monitor this implementation, and I'd also like to know whether they recommendations that have been made. Are they even being implemented? I see Honourable Matamai, your hand is also up. Perhaps I should allow you to raise your question. Honourable Matamai?
Yes, Chairperson, I was just want to know, for Katlehong, when I don't know where my police are, not my fatal police station, Mafatane police station. Mwelo hore hotse na teng maponesa a thola hore ba bitsa mosadi ba mogoga. A hona entwepe le gore after that le ponisa le tla tshwarwa o le ponisa le tla reng gore maponesa e a shebegala e ka re ke dikgosi. Ba shapa ba etsa yaka ba ba ta go etsa mo batho rona and a gona dikase tse e leng gore
otseba ga maponesa a fana go etsa
yalo go nka bothanako gore e ka kena mo mafatsane gobane mo mafatsane e ka re ga e yo thuta le yone maponesa a ikitsetsa ka thato ya bone go etsiwa yang ga go le yalo minister ka nfetola fela mo.
Thank you, Honourable Motsamai. You broke up a bit, but I'm sure the question is noted. Honourable Ganamela, do you want to ask another question? Your signal is very bad, Honourable Ganamela. We cannot hear you.
Can I proceed? Chairperson?
Yes.
Hello? Yes, Chair? Can you... Am I on?
But your signal is not so good. We can see you speaking.
Hello, Chair?
Can't hear you.
Yes, Chairperson, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Can you hear?
Honourable Ganamela, we can hear you. Could you please ask your question?
Okay, no, thanks, Chairperson. The question that I wanted to ask actually is about the two recent killings that happened in Mkhondo in Mpumalanga. And it's a known fact, and what we are getting is that the police are conniving with farmers in killings, and there's been a lot of killings that happened in that area. And investigations, obviously, they don't produce results. I just want to find out from the minister, what is it that they are doing about the issue of the farm killings, especially in Mkhondo, in Mpumalanga, in Gertsibande region. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Zandamela, for the question. Although I think yesterday the provincial commissioners were present in our meeting on Wednesday, rather, and I'm sure some of these questions could have been also responded at that point. But Minister, I mean, if the ball is in your court. But let me just ask a few more other questions. I think in terms of your slide 16, you make reference to two bills which will be submitted to Cabinet for approval. Are you able to just indicate to us as a committee in terms of which are the two goals that you intend submitting to Cabinet? And then in terms of the backlog on forensics, I think, and thank you for providing us with progress on the matter, but this is also a huge concern. Deshwin, I'm not sure what's happening with your screen. This has also been a huge concern. While you are providing us with the progress, can you also try and give us an indication in terms of the approximate timeframe that is required to address the backlog and also to ensure that the forensic lab is functioning efficiently? My other question is on the CPF functionality. And that is on slide 32. You mentioned that there are 11 CPFs that were found non-functional. Perhaps what are the reasons for the situation and what is being done to address these in these provinces? And further, how would you describe that working relationship between CPFs and neighborhood watches in terms of combating crime? And I think my final question relates to the provincial budgets. Now, clearly these allocations are made by provinces the national has no control over. But provinces are also expected to support the operations of the CSPS at provincial level. And that expectation of aligning the plans and operations, the planned policies and operations of the civilian secretariat are referred to here. I think in terms of your presentation, you did mention that you've entered into service level agreements, arrangements, but perhaps if you could just indicate whether this is actually working and what are the challenges in achieving this level of cooperation between the national CSP and the provincial secretariats or departments, given that, you know, there are different budgets, there's insufficient resource allocations in some provinces, and perhaps provinces can also make a comment on this. I think that's all from us, Minister, if I can then hand over to yourself. Thank you. Minister?
Thanks, Chairperson. I will take some the DMRCDA. Okay, I'll take some and then the secretary and the staff, they will go to those more operational. So the first one, I think, Mr. Marakis George, the first, the effects of the budget. Unfortunately, Chair, even during the rainy days, during the good days, budget is never enough. Now in the dry white season, where things are really bad. So the people on the ground doing operations, they will tell you. That's why I went past the Itu who was presenting, when she says that there can't be even the comparison between the police, which is 96 billion. By the way, the police money has been cut by 7 billion going forward themselves, going forward. So, but even if there was not that, she complains about that, there is no corresponding financial power between the secretariat and the police, even under normal circumstances. So you will definitely expect that the cuts, to such an extent, Chair, that there were efforts to raise the matter with the Treasurer, especially to both IPIT and Secretariat, to say, nonetheless, they are just small. Even if you don't add, leave them where they are. Those efforts were made, and unfortunately, those efforts were unsuccessful. Is no doubt that the impact is negative, and it will impede their work maximizing what they're supposed to do dealing with the police. The actual negative impact can be said by the people that are in the operations, but overall it's obvious, even if things were not like now, where things are very, very bad. The modernization will be explained by them. The forum IPIT and will be explained by Secretariat, the ICT, they will. The next question I'll go to is, I think it's Mr. Sam Zamdela, about the killings in Mpumalanga. I would be very disappointed when somebody accused the police of conniving with anybody there. I think the case at hand is one case where the police worked very hard on it, including opposing the bail. That's why the case stayed in court for so long, even before the decision was made to give the bail, which is not in the hands of the police at the end of the day. The police is to oppose it, to do their work. I think they did a good investigation. They did a good presentation. on police station. So one was at the court, one was very satisfied that they did the work. There are things that are raised of the police not doing their work when it comes to these relationships of the farmers and farm workers. What we'll request is that those that have actual information, they pass that information so that you are able to deal with the police on those matters, on the specific cases. The second question from the same member, the effect of bringing down. So the secretariat, why they contribute, they monitor and contribute and evaluate. The real people that will have to do that are the police. Jefferson, we have aligned ourselves with the call of the president to say gender-based violence is a second pandemic. We work with that understanding. It is on that score that we, with the little budget that is there, the budget cutting and all that, we have tried to put extra resources on this one, working with enhancing our unit FCS, working on the top station, 30 of them nationally, and top 30 on the provinces, to say let's put more effort. 100 million was put there, and extra other monies are put on these on these units. But not only that, the training itself has been done. More than 1,200 extra people have been put on the stations, maybe to answer the question that was asked by another member. I think that member was Isaac, of the police not caring at the station level, which is a fact, honorable members. We do have bad members as the members of South African police. More than 160,000 people that are there, you will have your rotten apples and all that. So ours, that this body, secretariat, including IPED, they will help us to raise those issues, and the disciplinary activities and actions should be followed by the management of the South African police. So the reduction is more on the police, assisted by the monitoring and the policy development by the secretariat, and putting resources there. One thing, how are we looking at the reduction of these cases, is to work with the NPA, working on the tight cases even before they go to court, so that there is a less withdrawal, there is a less throwing out of these cases out of court, because we have been working together. So we do work with the prosecution in most provinces in preparing of these cases. Maybe Chair, that takes me to your last question of the backlog, which also impacts very, very negative to the resolution of these cases of the abuse of women, rape, sexual assault, and against the children, but against other major cases like murder. Chairperson, 2 weeks ago we went public when we were dealing with crime stats, and we apologized to nations because there's been a big mess when it comes to this forensic and the DNA. After that, I had visited two laboratories, main laboratory, Chairperson. That is your Western Cape laboratory and the Pretoria laboratory. You sit down and you listen and you just wonder, how did we arrive here? If I share with you, 16-17, financially, Chairperson, we had about 600 only 600 per clock. 1718, I think we had only 1,000. But 1819, Chairperson, we had 50,000. Today, as we speak, we have 210,000. So you just wonder how we have arrived here. Looking at that, trying to dissect and give the analysis, we have found a few things of which we have gone public with. One, there's been a corruption in the environment. No doubt about that. Let me illustrate one corruption. So the budget has been centralized. Then your one of your laboratories, let's say Western Cape, they will say, they'll put their orders on the table and then send it national for financing. It will be delayed for 4 months and then taken back to them to redo it because it was 1 cent extra to the amount that they have supposed to have put there. But it will wait for 4 months because somebody wants to dismiss the province and do the central procurement. And that can tell you that that central procurement comes with some cuts for some people. So corruption is part of it. Secondly, the bad management of contracts. All contracts, they fall apart. There is a policy that says you begin to work on the contract between 6 and 8 months before the contract expires. But many contracts have expired. That's why at a go, we had to renew 16 or 15 contracts. And you wonder why they were allowed to collapse. Those contracts that have collapsed, they cost the consumables, they cost reagents, they cost chemicals, and your laboratories, they come to a total standstill. But Chairperson, maybe working on that, one can say we have turned the corner. The consumables are there. They might not be enough because contracts take too long. We approached the National Treasurer. We requested the deviation of which was given. So we have put some of them. That's one. Two, we have tried to deal with the personnel. 127 people have been placed on the in the FCL and laboratories where they will enhance the presence of the personnel to do things faster. Thirdly, we have advertised 150 new positions. That as we speak, people are being interviewed. We expect them to be at work come July 1st. Which will improve the question of personnel in this environment in laboratories. Also, we are dealing with labor so that people they are available for extra time. They work longer hours. Those are the things that we need to deal with labor. That is happening. More money has been found. We have found 250 million extra on top of the baseline work on these things. The contracts of keeping machines working, maintenance of these machines is being worked on. So we think we have turnaround on that one. There is a one question big of the PCAM where you trace and track. That has been stopped June 2020, which has made life very difficult for the police working with the prosecution of submitting in court to give the evidence. To that extent, Chairperson, we went physical on the matter. Working on physical on the matter, you would only trace only thousands of these ready registered samples in a week. But now with the new one, that has been developed by police and the CETA, we are managing to trace between 10 and 11,000 a week. So we have improved there. Though I must warn that we have been taken to court about the original company that we threw to say to take us to court on the IP matters. One has raised it with the CETA and the police, and we have been assured that it's got nothing to do with the IPs of that company. We believe that we will continue, because if they win, there will be a problem again, and the court say we must stop. We have started to work faster on that one, as I'm saying, that instead of dealing with 1,000 a week, we're beginning to deal about 11,000 a week, which is taking us forward on that. Chair, all in all, we expect to have a complete turnaround and be on the sailing mood on this one, cruising mood. We're giving ourselves 18 months, but we're told by the operators in the environment to say, if everything is done properly, these people come at work, there is more people to do time for longer time, we fix all machines, we buy everything, it might be even lesser than that time. So we believe we have reached the turnaround strategy on this one. That's what I would say. I wanted to stay longer on this one, Chair, because it has made a lot of pain. It has made a lot of noise, and indeed the nation has been very much anxious about this situation. Chair, I will end there. Maybe end with the last one, that I would like to get more information from the Honorable Sister about this matter, so that we are able to speak to the police in the province and make sure that we are working on this matter. So I'll allow Chair the other questions to be answered by the Secretary and Mr. Rapia and his team.
Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Minister. I will deal with some of the questions which are operational, and thanks, Minister, has addressed a number of those issues strategically. I just want to just add on the issue of the budget cuts. At least with the current arrangement under COVID, that we have to use online engagement, we are managing to stay within the budget that we have. But our concern now, because the negotiations at the PSCBC, it looks like it's yielding results, and we know that when they conclude, National Treasury will say get the money from the baseline. And the increase in terms of compensation of employees is too high than what we have, because usually when they say go to the to your baseline, you must use the money for vacancies. And if it happens that we have filled all the vacancies, we might find ourselves in a problem. But we are looking at that effectively. The other impact is the kind of work that we are doing in terms of the numbers that we have. We are supposed at a minimum at the civilian secretariat, we are supposed to have about 250 employees. Currently, we are functioning at 155 vacancies, posts. And in terms of our discussion with the minister in the structure that we are looking at when the good season comes back, is that at least if we can get additional 50 employees, we'll be able to have an impact. But if the budget cuts continue, we won't be able to have those resources that we need to do our work efficiently and effectively. So that's what I want to indicate on the budget. With regard to the modernization in terms of the e-policing policy, the policy itself will go in terms of how should SAPS deal with issues of technology strategically to be more effective. We have observed throughout the years that the numbers of police officers, they keep on being cut. So the policy itself will look in terms of overall what kind of technology can be brought in to address the challenges in terms of the dwindling of the personnel, and also dealing with policing in difficult areas. We know that the challenge of environmental design impacts on policing, and you need to have a policy that deals with how are you going to deal with policing in such environment. So that is going to deal with that, including even in rural environment, that we should have a digital or electronic policing. How can it assist in terms of the rural area? So it gives them the framework that they can work on as they invest in technology. With regard to the tangible results, tangible achievements between ourselves and IPIT, the consultative forum that we have, it looks in terms of whether the police are implementing the recommendation of IPIT. One of the issues that we've identified is that the National Prosecuting Authority, most of the time they would be throwing away cases and they don't take them for prosecution. Now, in terms of the current IP, the amendments that we are bringing in IP bill, we are also saying that the National Prosecuting Authority should also be part of the consultative forum, because they play a major role in terms of ensuring that there is discipline and dealing with criminality within SAPS, and that is now in the draft legislation. Also, if you look into the current draft SAPS bill, we have put in a section in the bill, or a clause in the bill, which says that SAPS need to have a dedicated resource of people who will be dealing with disciplinary cases. Because as it stands now, most of the people who are dealing with disciplinary cases, they are not dedicated. That's why it takes too long for them to resolve some of these cases. And the other issue is we have, through this consultative forum, established now the forums at provincial level, which actually addresses the challenges that are there, where there's differences in terms of the statistics. So those issues are addressed at provincial level. There was a question regarding the ICT framework. Yes, the strategy, it is our own ICT strategic framework that we have approved. Our ICT has been very weak throughout, and the major challenge being that the building which we are in, it's also a constraint, because the servers, you don't have servers in-house. We have the servers externally. They are housed in CETA, but as we are moving in this strategy, it's going to assist us in making sure that we become efficient in terms of delivering our services, and also that the work that we do will be accessible, because we will have in our knowledge management unit the research that we do. we are able to put them in the system, and people can access them who need that to support us in the safety and crime prevention program. We had challenges with the CETA. We are still having challenges, and we have ordered servers which we need for the new building, but we had also identified in the current building a place where we could house them. And it took us 2 years to come to a point wherein they finalized the tender process. So those are some of those challenges that we are addressing with CETA, with DPW. We were supposed to have moved into a building 2 years ago, but just as when we were supposed to move in, they brought in another client and we had to start our process from scratch. So these are some of the challenges that we have, but we keep on engaging the responsible people so that we don't get bogged down in complaining about how they're going. With regard to the issue of the GBV, Minister has indicated in terms of our role. What we do is we go to police station, because on the Domestic Violence Act, we're supposed to monitor how SAPS is implementing the Domestic Violence Act. If people come to the police stations, they need to report cases of domestic violence, of gender-based violence. They need to be treated with dignity. So we will go to police station, assess whether they've got victim-friendly rooms, whether to deal with violence against women, whether they have a woman a police officer on site all the time to deal with those cases. We also look into their register, because they must register all the cases that come in there, and whether work is being done to deal with that. Our policy on reducing barriers to reporting gender-based violence and sexual offenses has resulted in what we call the six-point plan of the minister, which they post us that when you get into the police station, if you are a victim, you will know what are your rights when you are there. And that came as a result of the policies that we have. And we are going to arrange that the two reports that we submit, because we table two reports in Parliament a year, we will make sure that those reports, we also submit them to the select committee. And then we are available, Honorable Chairperson, to come and make a presentation on the report that we have produced. The other issue that I want to respond to is the human capital strategy, which I will ask Ms. Wechwe Mang, the Chief Director of Corporate Services, maybe to address those questions regarding on how are we going to measure that strategy.
Thank you. Thank you. Am I audible?
Yes, you are.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Chair. In terms of how we measure the HR, the human capital strategy, is that the human capital strategy is overarching and coupled with the HR strategy are the operational strategies. For instance, the employee health and wellness strategy, which is standing on its own with its related policies. We will recall that they were non-existent before in the department,
For instance, the HRD strategy with the, a couple of their policies, they were developed. So we had targeted to develop 8 strategies, operational strategies in 2020, and we successfully achieved to develop about 10. And based on that, these are the strategies that are improving the efficiencies in the department. And we are therefore implementing them. As we implement, we are also assessing them and measuring them through the regular job satisfaction surveys that we will be implementing. But coupled with that, we have strengthened our performance management system because the performance management system was not really aligned in terms of the levels. And now we've aligned it. All the employees sign performance agreements at the same time they are monitored. They are moderated, and the moderation objective is to find out whether they are properly aligned with our CSPS strategy and the secretary's performance agreement, because in the past it was not they were not aligned. You'd find that the secretary is supposed to achieve certain things, however they do not appear anywhere in anybody's performance agreements. So those are the efficiencies that we are creating in the department, and we continuously implement and measure. And the 5-year implementation plan that is aligned with the human capital strategy is divided into the annual targets. And with the annual targets, we measure us in terms of how far have we achieved all those targets that we have set for ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Wetchemang. Just 2 last questions that were asked. The 2 bills that will be processed, we have already gone to cabinet with the amendment to the protection of constitutional democracy against terrorists and related activities amendment bill. And we have also presented the firearms control amendment bill, which cabinet has approved that we take it for publication for public comments. And we are also advanced in terms of the amendment to the IP Act, which is also the one that we will be processing to cabinet, and the DNA bill, which was previously withdrawn from the cabinet process. It's now going to be processed through cabinet for introduction to parliament, because it's a short amendment, not for publication, public comment. So these are the bills that are in the pipeline. Just with regard to rural safety, the minister in the last year met with the traditional leaders. He also engaged with farmers unions, and we have signed memorandum of agreement with two farmers unions and contra lesser for us to work together with rural communities in ensuring that the rural safety strategy is realized and it actually meets their concerns. Thank you very much, Chairperson and Minister.
Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, Chair.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I think we have answered. Maybe one would be Honourable Member Samai, question I did not get very well, but it looks like was complaining about the treatment of the women in one of the police stations. If in Katlehong, if we can get exactly the story so that we can take it up with the management of Gauteng. But by look of things, looks like we have tried to respond to many of your comments and questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Minister, and thank you to the team for the responses. Our members, do you have any follow-up questions? Honourable members? I see Honourable Zanamela.
Yes, Chairperson. Let me just acknowledge the response from the minister. One of the things that I would like to raise to that, to bring to the attention of the minister, that I heard him saying earlier on, yes, he agrees there are rotten potatoes within the police force. And if possible, Chairperson, I was personally in that case in Mukondo, and there's a lot of things that were raised by communities. And if possible, if I can get, I can bring that information to the minister. Because the things, if there's allegations of wrongdoings by the police, I'm sure if we bring it to the attention of the minister, then there should be some investigation with regard to it. So if I can just be assisted, so that I bring that information to the attention of the minister. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Zanamela. Honourable Sitter.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, I haven't had any sufficient answer from the minister regarding the dysfunctional police stations, the lawless circumstances that people in the streets of Northwest towns are experiencing. Nobody has replied on the conditions there. We cannot have people being attacked in the streets as much as 20 to 25 was last week Friday attacked in the streets. And nobody does nothing. The police doesn't even go out. They do not want to hear anything about theft or attacks or assaults or anything like that. And it's so severe that international and national tourist bureaus write on their pages, please avoid traveling on the N14 because people are tourists are attacked. People of Botswana were attacked last week. One of them was stabbed with a knife in the neck and the arm through the window to get his car or his cell phone or whatever. There's a whole thing going on there and nothing is happening. And I have reported this to all the structures in the Northwest province, not now, for the last 3 years already. And it's never been improving. Instead, it's deteriorating and we need to have answers on that.
Honourable Matamai, you also want to raise something. Can you please be brief, Honourable Matamai?
Yes.
Honourable Matamai, we cannot hear you.
Yes. Chairperson, ne ke botsa minister gore ko mafatsane, ne ke botsa minister gore ko mafatsane, o dule lena. Dule minister.
Honourable Matamai, we cannot hear you. Can I propose, honourable members, with the Northwest Gauteng, being raised by Honourable Matamai, Honourable Sitter, and Honourable Zanamela, that those matters be raised with the provincial commissioners. And it's just unfortunate that some of the issues were not raised in our meeting on Friday. Because we had provincial commissioners present who were able to overhear what some of these issues are, notwithstanding the fact that the matters can also be raised with the minister's office. I don't want us to also move away a lot from the CSPS budget and APP issues, because I think we're specifically dealing with that budget for now. Although they do have an oversight and monitoring role on the set. But be that as it may, honorable members, Minister, maybe you could just have a last word on the matter.
Thank you, Chair. With honorable members, I'm Tiela. I would really be open to receive the information promised and we see how I take it forward. Honorable member Fesser, I don't think I agree fully with her that nothing was said. I answered on that one. Can we get the specific cases and specific of those stations? That's what I said. So that we take it with the provincial commissioner and the management of the province to work on those specific cases. I think with the honorable member, Kenny Musame, we'll deal with matters moving forward. As we usually do, touch base, he phoned me now again, so he can phone me on this one, and we see how we take the matter forward. But the Northwest issue is definitely many things that are happening. We must remember that there is an interministerial task team dealing with the Northwest matters, of which the Minister of Police is part of it, of which the Minister of Police does work with the leadership there, the Premier and especially the Commissioner. So we'll be taking those forward. Thanks.
Thank you, Minister. And I want to also take this opportunity to thank representatives from the various provinces that are present here today. While I know there hasn't been any specific issue asked on provincial budget, but as the select committee, we will be engaging with provinces, especially around the monitoring of the Domestic Violence Act compliance by SAP. So we expect to have a much more greater interaction with the various provinces on this matter, obviously together with the national CSP office. But with that being said, let me thank you, Honourable Minister and the PPP in his absence, as well as the Civilian Secretariat for your input and for this constructive engagement with the committee in terms of your APP and budget. And as said, provinces, thank you for attending this meeting. We'd like to also encourage the department to continue with its work in respect of monitoring the South African Police Services, including the Domestic Violence Act compliance, and continuously ensuring the effective functionality of the community policing forum structures within communities, all of which we all believe contributes towards ensuring safer communities. And once again, thank you, the department. Wish you well in your endeavors to meet your APP targets within the current budgetary constraints. That being said, Minister, we'll then move on to the issue of IFED, the budget and APP of IFED. I just want to verify firstly from Gershwin whether they were able to log on.
Yes, Chairperson, we have the IFED logged on.
Oh, they have logged on. Okay. Then let me formally welcome officials from the Independent Police Investigative Directorate. Unfortunately, I am unable to verify who has joined us.
Yes.
Okay, I'm not sure what that is.
Chair, I'm still here.
Yes. Okay. Okay, no, but welcome. Special welcome to the artist. Also welcome to the new executive director. She is with us today. Members will recall that I could work without an executive director since March 2019, and in terms of our last engagement with the department and with ICID, as joint committees, we also set aside certain time frames for the minister to address this matter, and I think we're happy that that has been done. Honourable members, I think just also in line with our mandate as the National Council of Provinces, we had also asked the ICID to provide us with additional information as well in terms of their presentation. Obviously, the provincial budget allocations are amongst those. We also asked to be briefed on vacancies in provinces, challenges on staffing, resources, and for them to also highlight their achievements. We wanted to also brief on the cases being investigated and the levels of compliance with IPED recommendations amongst others. But I think even as the IPED would make that presentation, Honourable Minister, I did go through the presentation, but I would also like to request upfront, you know, that there's certain terminology that is used in the presentation that this also be clarified. I think they must please clarify the distinction between positive and negative recommendations. And I think this will also ensure that all of us are on board in terms of that understanding and will also assist us in terms of our engagement of this presentation. With that being said, Honourable Minister, let me hand over back to you for the ICID to then take us through their presentation. Honourable Minister?
Thanks, Chair. Again, this would be an entity reporting directly to the DM, but as I've said, I've had a lot of engagement with the structure myself, especially the ED, with the head of the investigation, Mr. Sissoko. So we are working quite closely on the matters. One thing that we had to work on, there was some form, Chairperson, of animosity between of the police and the structure. It should not be so. It should not be so at all. That's one area that we're trying to work to say, IPED, they're just doing our work, helping all of us to put our police on the acceptable integrity, acceptable posture as we work with the communities out there. Working with the new ED, it has been quite pleasure. I don't want to market her before you encounter and you meet her, you hear. It seems to be a very formidable lady going forward. I work with IPED very well. Their reports of their recommendations to me, as you know, that their recommendations will be both those people that are supposed to go through the criminal justice system with the prosecution and those that are supposed to be internal disciplined with the South African police. Those reports up to this far, they are flowing. One is quite happy with those reports going forward. Then, Chairperson, I will hand over to you so that you are able to see the new ET, and together with her staff, they will take us through on the issues that have been raised and requested before, including the request you have made now of deciphering the terminology of the department. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Minister. Can we then hand over to Mr. Singh? Are you with us? Oh, yes.
Yes, yes. Good morning. Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, members of the committee. And thank you very much for affording us this opportunity to present to you our budget as well as our activities for the financial year 2021-2022. We'll also address some of the questions that you have sent to us to respond to. We will also make sure that all the abbreviations or languages that we use internally are actually clarified to yourself so that you can then understand when you talk about the recommendations as he has classified them as positive and negative, what do we really mean. But let me also introduce my team members who are with me. These are senior managers that I'm sitting with in the boardroom. It's unfortunate that we don't have a big screen where we can see all of us. With me, it's the National Head of Investigation, Mr. Matthew Sisoko. And then I also have Mem Letlape from Strategic Unit. I also have Mem Dilega Tola, who's our Head of Communications. I also have Mem Molope, who's also Head of Compliance. We also have our own acting CFO, Mr. Sisedi, because the one that we had has resigned in December. I also have my people in the office. So I am going to go through the presentation jointly with Mr. Sisoko as well as the strategic head. Please allow me to do that. We will also include Mr. Sisedi to also talk about the budget as well. But we will try by all means. I know that our slides are 52. We will run through some of the slides. We don't have to go in detail in those slides, Chairperson, so that we should not spend more time doing presentation than hearing what members are saying to us. So we're busy writing their presentation. Chair, I'm not sure if somebody can assist us to flag our presentation on the screen.
Keshwan, are you able to do that? I hope you've got your final presentation. Keshwan?
Thank you very much, Mr. Keshwan. I'll go to the first slide, the second slide, please. I will be giving the executive director's overview about our department. One is the purpose of the presentation is to brief the Select Committee on Security and Justice on the IPT's budget, strategic plan 2020 to 2025, annual performance plan for 2021-2022 financial year, and provide additional information as per the invitation letter. Reduction to budget baseline amounts affected department's plans. The reduction resulted into an extensive reprioritization of the revised baseline and adjustment of the MTF targets. The organizational structure will also be reviewed to ensure optimal utilization of the current personnel. Our key priorities for 2021-2022 financial year. One is we are hoping that the IPT bill will be finalized in this financial year. We need to strengthen investigative capacity and refine processes to improve the quality of investigation. This is what we're currently doing with the National Head of Investigation. Prioritization of cases which will include gender-based violence and femicide, rape, death, corruption, and torture. Full implementation of Section 23 of the IPT Act to comply with court orders. We've got a court order where we have to make sure that we meet the conditions of service for our investigators. Continuous implementation of ICT key projects. This has been one of our challenges in the institution. Our ICT is unstable, but we're working very hard to make sure that it is functional in this year. And we're working very closely with CITA as well as Telkom to make sure that we have a fully functional ICT. Implementation of new strategies in line with the departmental 10-point plan. I came up with a 10-point plan when I came in as part of my vision to make sure that we take the department to another level. Strengthening of partnership through development and signing of stakeholders. We've already started engaging stakeholders because we don't just want to wait and say that we don't have budgets. We are trying to be innovative. We are trying to be innovative
where we can to make sure that we strengthen our own capacity internally. Intense community mobilization and stakeholder engagement. This year, Chairperson and members of the committee, we are going to go out there. We're going to make sure that people know about IPIT and people are responding to us, because we've already launched a toll-free number and we want to make sure that people are utilizing the toll-free number and report cases against the police. IP 2021 MTF budget and provincial breakdown. I will then hand over to my colleagues to then start with the process. Over to you, Mr. Teddy.
Thank you, Executive Director, and greetings to the Chairperson, Minister, Honorable Members, as well as our colleagues. I'm going to take you through our MTF budget. The first slide talks to our budget allocation and spending for the past three financial years. Members will realize that the expenditure for all those three financial years has been 99.9%, which demonstrates our capacity to spend the allocation that has been made to IPIT, but not only demonstrating the capacity, also showing that the budget that has been allocated to this department is still not enough to allow the department to execute its mandate. The next part within the same slide talks to, can you go back, apologies, thank you. It talks to the MTF, 2021 MTF allocations over the 3 years. Members will also see that there is an insignificant increase when coming to our allocation. When you looked at the comparison between 21-22 financial year to 22-23, there's only 1% increase to our budget. And when you compare 22-23 to 23-24 financial year, there's only 2% increase. This is how the budget is increased over those financial year, which really means we cannot have any improvement in terms of our services. Can we go to the next slide? Thank you. The next slide is reflecting the budget allocation per program. We've got four programs, administration, investigation and information management, which is our core function. We also have legal and investigation advisory service. And the last program is compliance monitoring and stakeholder management. And we have indicated how the budget has been allocated from the financial year 18-19 to the current financial year, which is 21-22. We have also indicated the impact of the budget cut that was implemented in 2021. It's 14.6 million. In the previous presentation, I've indicated that it might look small as you compare ourselves with other departments, but for IT, as small as we are, it's a big amount. It affects the operation of the organization. Can we move to the next slide? The next slide talks to the budget allocation per program. It's also a comparison. We have given programs as well as classification. The chunk of our budget goes to compensation of employees, as we are always trying to make sure that we've got enough investigators to execute the Repeat Act mandate. So you'll see that our compensation of employees is about 70%. Of our total budget, and followed by goods and services, where we settle our contractual obligation, renting of offices, renting of our photocopier machine, security services, and cleaning services in various offices of IT. So those are the two items that have accommodated in our budget allocation. Next slide. Next slide, please. Thank you. The following slide, Honorable Chairperson, is a demonstration of our budget allocation. Honorable members will see that we started in 2018 and we tried to move in 2019-20, and there was also an increase. And this financial year, were as a result of 150 million that we received from SAPS over the period of MTEF, and hence you see that demonstration of an increase. But now, from the 2021, members will then realize that there was a decline as a result of that 14 million cut. And since then, because of there has not been any additional budget increase, we have been showing a decline as compared to our 2021 financial year. Next slide. Thank you. Honorable Chair and members and Minister, there's a criteria that we normally use to calculate our budget in the provinces. We normally consider the size of the provinces. We consider the number of investigators allocated in those provinces. We also consider the distance traveled by the provinces, such as your Northern Cape. Northern Cape is one of the smallest provinces, but in terms of their vastness, there is a traveling, and when we make an allocation, we consider those factors. And lastly, we also consider the case intake per province, and that's where we then give this allocation that has been reflected here. We have also demonstrated how allocation has been made from 2018-19 to the current financial year. We had 148 million, which takes the bulk of our budget allocation in 18-19. And in the current financial year, which is 21-22, we are sitting at 170. We are trying by all means to shift most of our budget from non-core activities to our provinces where the work is done. Can we then move to the next slide? Thank you, Chair. I think that was the last slide, provinces. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm now going to allow Mem Letlapwe, who is responsible for a strategic planning unit, to then present the strategic plan 2020-2025. Over to you, Mem Letlapwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to the Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, and good morning also to the Minister. I'll be taking you through the adjustments to our strategic plan for 2020-2025 period. Our impact statement is a responsible and accountable police service that renders professional service in a human rights environment. And the adjustments that were effected, they are within Program 1 and Program 4. And starting with Program 1, which is administration, the outcome is effective and efficient administrative support, and the outcome indicator that has been discontinued, its percentage increase in ICT systems availability. And the reason for discontinuing the indicator is because the five-year target that we had set is already achieved. And for Program 4, which is compliance monitoring and stakeholder management, the outcome was improved awareness on IP services, and the outcome indicator was increase in number of people reached out through awareness campaigns nationally. Both the outcome and the outcome indicator, Chairperson, they were discontinued in order to ensure that an inclusive approach is undertaken in order to strengthen relations with department's key stakeholders. And the new outcome that we agreed upon is a strengthened stakeholder relations, and the new outcome indicator is percentage implementation of communications and stakeholder management strategy with the five-year target of 60%. We can go to the next slide. The next slide, it reflects our strategic plan as it is now. Program 1, the outcome is effective and efficient administrative support with three outcome indicators. The first one is improved financial governance, and the next one is percentage increase of vacancies filled within 6 months, and the last one is percentage increase of vacancies filled within 6 months. Under Program 2, we have an outcome which is reduced level of police criminality and misconduct, and the outcome indicators are three. The first one is increase in number of criminal cases decided by the NPA and increase in number of disciplinary recommendations initiated. The last one is increase in number of disciplinary recommendations finalized. On the next slide, under program three, which is legal investigation advisory services, we have one outcome, department's legal interest protected with two outcome indicators, which is percentage of legal advice resulting in resolved investigation challenges. And the last one is percentage reduction of number of legal claims against the department. And under program four, the outcome is strengthen stakeholder relations, and the indicator is percentage implementation of communication stakeholder management strategy. Now I'll be taking you through the annual performance plan for the 2021-2022, but it also covers the two outer years of the MTF period. Under program one, we have a total of seven output indicators, and there are new two indicators that were introduced, which are in line with the department's 10-point plan. The first one is percentage implementation of youth development strategy per year. And the second one is percentage implementation of gender-based violence and femicide strategy per year. These are our indicators for program one, starting with the percentage implementation of ICT plan per year. In the 1920 financial year, the audited performance was 50%, and for 2021, the estimated level of performance, which is our target, was at 90%. And for the MTF period, the targets for the first 2 years is 70%, and the last year is 80%. And for the percentage implementation of annual internal audit plan, we achieved 79% in 1920, and for 2021, we targeted 90%. And the target for the MTF period is 90% for the first year, and the two outer years is 100%. And for percentage implementation of risk mitigation strategies per year, the target is we achieved 21% in 1920, and in 2021 target is 60, and for the MTF period is 60% first year, and the two outer years is 70%. And for percentage compliance of SMS financial interest submitted through a disclosure within stipulated time frame per year, the indicator was introduced in 2021, and the target was set at 100%, and we are maintaining 100% throughout the MTF period. Next slide. The last three indicators for program one, we have percentage vacancy rate. We maintained our vacancy at 9.97 in 1920, and for 2021, the target was to maintain the vacancy below 10%. And for the MTF period, the target is maintained at 10%. And for the implementation of youth development strategy, it's a new indicator. And the target for the first two financial years of the MTF period is set at 80%. And for the third year, it's at 87%. And for the implementation of gender-based violence and femicide strategy, it's also a new indicator. The first two years, the target is at 70%, and for the last financial year of the MTF period, the target is 80%. And for program two, which is our core, program investigation and information management, we have a total of 13 output indicators, and there were no new indicators that were introduced nor discontinued. And for the MTF targets, we made adjustments to 8 output indicators, and this was due to the challenges related to COVID-19 pandemic. Delays in obtaining technical reports. This might be the DNA or the postmortem or the ballistic reports. And we also took into consideration the total workload of our cases, which seeks to active cases and also post-decision ready cases. With post-decision ready cases, this might also be cases that are on a court roll or cases where there are queries, DPP queries, and they still need to be attended to, or cases where they are awaiting closure processes to be undertaken. And the eight targets that were adjusted, they are related to death in police custody, death as a result of police action, rape by police officer, rape while in police custody, corruption, systemic corruption, matters referred in section 28.1H, and also matters referred in section 33.3 of the IP Act. On this slide, we are reflecting our output indicators for our core. And the first one is investigation of deaths in police custody that are decision ready. We achieved 213 in 1920, and in 2021, we projected 180. And for the MTF period, the target was reduced to 120 throughout the MTF period. And for investigations of death as a result of police action that are decision ready, the achievement in 1920 was 295, and in 2021 we targeted 280, and the target was adjusted downwards to 220 throughout the MTF period. And for investigations of discharge of an official firearm by police officer that are decision ready, we achieved 494 in 1920, and we targeted 370 in 2021. And for the MTF period, we maintained the target at 370 throughout the MTF period. And for investigations of rape by police officer that are decision ready, we achieved 115 in 1920. And for 2021, we projected 130. And for the MTF period, the target was reduced to 70 throughout the MTF period. And for number of investigations of rape while in police custody that are decision ready, we achieved 9 in 1920. We targeted 15 in the previous financial year, and we are targeting 6 throughout the MTF period. And for investigations of torture, we achieved 116 in 1920, and we targeted 80 in the previous financial year, and we maintained 80 throughout the MTF period. And for investigations of assault cases, we achieved 2,504 in 1920. In 2021, we targeted 2,000, and we are maintaining 2,000 throughout the MTF period. For corruption matters, we achieved 57 in 1920, and we targeted 85 in the previous financial year, and the target is adjusted downwards to 70 throughout the MTF period. For matters related to Section 28.1H, we achieved 35 in 1920, and in 2021, we projected 10, and we are maintaining the target of 10 throughout the MTF period. And for Section 33 matters, we achieved 47 in 1920, and in 2021, the target was set at 25, and for the MTF period, the target is 5 throughout the MTF period. And all these targets, Chairperson, they include backlog cases and new cases that would have been registered for the period that are reflected in this slide. We can go to the next slide. And for number of approved semi-corruption cases, In 2019-20, we achieved 4. In 2021, we targeted 3. And for the MTF period, we are targeting 2 throughout the 3 financial years. And for the 2 last indicators, dockets referred to the National Prosecuting Authority within 30 days of being signed off, we achieved 90%. And for 2021, the target was 90%. And for the MTF period, the target is maintained at 90%. And the last one, percentage of recommendation reports referred to subs and the MPS within 30 days of recommendation report being signed off, we achieved 94% in 1920. And 2021, the target was maintained at 90%, and we are maintaining 90% throughout the MTF period. And for program 3, We have a total of 4 output indicators, and there were no changes to the indicators nor to the MTF targets. We maintained the targets throughout the MTF period. And for the first one, which is a percentage of legal advice provided to investigators within 2 working days of request, we achieved 100% in 1920. 2021, we targeted 95%, and we are maintaining the same target throughout the MTF period. For written legal advice provided to the department within 30 working days of request, we achieved 90% in 1920, and the target for 2021, 70%, we are maintaining the same target throughout the MTF period. And for litigation matters referred with instructions to the state attorney within 10 working days of receipt, in 2021, the target was set at 100%, and we are maintaining the target throughout the MTF period. The last indicator, which is contracts or service level agreements finalized within 30 working days of request, we achieved 96% in 1920 financial year. And in the previous financial year, the target was set at 90%, and we are maintaining the 90% throughout the MTF period. For program 4, which is our last program, compliance monitoring and stakeholder management, we have a total of 8 indicators, and the output indicator for number of engagements held with key stakeholders per year will cover meetings with stakeholders, station lectures, and community outreach events. That is the change that was effected in the current financial year. In the previous financial year, we used to have standalone indicators for meetings with stakeholders, station lectures, and community outreach events. And there are also 2 new indicators that we introduced. The first one is number of media programs held per year, and the last one is percentage implementation of access and awareness rural strategy per year. And the other changes that were effected under Program 4, there are 2 indicators that have been in existence and they were reviewed. And the change that was effected was the method of calculation from a number to a percentage. They now read as percentage of responses from SAPS and MPS that are analyzed within 30 days of receipt. And the last one is percentage of responses from NPA that are analyzed within 30 days of receipt. The first indicator, number of engagements held with key stakeholders per year, we achieved 143 in 1920. In 2021, the target was 136, and we are targeting 166 throughout the MTF period. And for number of media programs, the target is 4 throughout the MTF period. And for percentage of recommendations referred to SAPS and NPS that are analyzed, the target is 80% throughout the MTF period. And for percentage of criminal referrals forwarded to NPA that are analyzed, the target is maintained at, it's set at 80% throughout the MTF period. And for percentage of responses from SAPS and NPS that are analyzed within 30 days of receipt, we achieved 99% in 1920. In 2021, the target was set at 60%, and the target is maintained at 60% throughout the MTF period. These responses, Chairperson, they relate to the final outcome on the disciplinary processes that would have been undertaken by SAPS and IPID. Once we receive the responses, we analyze to ascertain as to whether are we in agreement with the outcomes or not. And the next one is percentage of responses from the NPA that are analyzed within 30 days of receipt. These are responses pertaining to the decision by the NPA as to whether to prosecute or not to prosecute the matters that we would have referred to them. And we analyze that. And if we are not in agreement, there is a process of review that is undertaken. And for 1920, the achievement was 94%. For 2021, the target was set at 50%. And for the MTF period, the target is set at 60%. And for the number of case docket inspections conducted, the target in 1920 was 5. In 2021, in 1920, we achieved 5, and the target in 2021 was set at 5, and we are maintaining the 5 for the MTF period. This is the number of jacket inspections that will be conducted. And for the last one, which is percentage implementation of access and awareness rural strategy, is a new indicator. For the MTF period, the target is set at 60%. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I am now going to hand over to the National Head of Investigation, Mr. Matthew Sisoko, to then take us through the provincial interest in strategic plan and annual performance plan. Thank you. That's it. Sisoko.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, Minister and Deputy Minister. I'm going to present on the provincial interest in the strategic plan. We have three outcomes that the provinces are contributing to. The first one is increasing the number of criminal cases decided by NPA. These would be dockets that were where investigation is finalized and referred to NPA for decision on whether to prosecute or not. All provincial offices are contributing to the attainment of the five-year target of 1,503 cases. Increase in number of disciplinary recommendations initiated. These are disciplinary recommendations submitted to SAPS and NPS for initiation of disciplinary process. All provincial officers contributing to the attainment of the five-year target of 609 cases. Increase in the number of disciplinary recommendations finalized. These are disciplinary recommendations that were concluded. All provincial offices are contributing to the attainment of the five-year target of 2,000. Next slide. The next slide refers to the provincial interest in the annual performance plan. Here, Chairperson, when we do our targets, which Ms. Litlape has already spoken about at slides 21 to 23, those would be the totals on this slide. Now we show the breakdown in terms of provinces, how they contribute in respect of each different categories of cases that we investigate. You will note that there are different numbers in terms of those targets. How we determine this, Chairperson, is we look at the intake, the baseline intake of each province, the number of investigators in that province, and then based on that, we allocate specific targets for each province. And you will note from this slide that the different provinces have got different targets for each different category of cases. You'll note that the highest would be your assault cases, where we get most of the cases. And you'll note that the bigger provinces will have a bigger chunk of those targets. And this is also reflected in the intake that happens in those provinces. The next slide. Next slide talks to the current vacancies in provinces, challenges on staffing and resources and key achievements. This is what the committee requested us to address. This slide shows the current vacancies within program 2, which is 28 of vacancies, and it shows also the different levels of those vacancies. The department also embarked on reprioritizing some of the vacancies which were at a higher level to a lower level. And you'll note that the KZN office will now be receiving four investigator positions, Western Cape 3 investigator positions, Eastern Cape 3 investigator positions, and Gauteng office will also receive 4 investigator positions in line with that prioritization. The next slide talks to the challenges on staffing and resources in the provinces. We indicate there the capacity, personnel constraints, taking into account the high case workload, which has always been the issue with IPID, and we've already articulated this position in all our engagements. The department baseline allocation has been reduced over the MTF period. The budget cut was mainly in the compensation of employees, which has an impact on the ability and the capacity of the directorate to carry out its constitutional mandate. The filling of posts was negatively affected by budget cuts. All vacant posts in the establishment were reprioritized to accommodate the reduction of the budget baseline, which resulted in the process of filling vacant posts being put on hold. And we also indicate that long-distance travel and the vastness of the majority of the provinces, because we have not been able to implement our expansion strategy. So we only have 1 office in each province, and in others we may have a satellite office, but that is wholly inadequate for us to be able to adequately discharge our mandate. The response time to crime scene is not satisfactory due to department not having footprint in all the districts in the provinces. The next slide, we talk to key achievements in the provinces. The ability of the management in the provinces to manage during the crisis period, such as at the peak of the COVID-19 pandemic, the intermittent closure of offices of IFID and those of the stakeholders due to the pandemic did not deter management in the provinces to provide essential services. Management in the provinces being able to sustain performance in majority of targets and even exceeding some of the set annual targets for 2020-2021 financial year. IPID hotline was launched on the 12th of October 2020 to improve access to IPID services nationally. Regionalization model for implementation of access and awareness rural strategy. This would allow IPID to have a bigger footprint, having multiple offices serving larger parts of each province. These consultations are still continuing with other departments to ensure that we get offices where we're able to in districts in the provinces. Collaboration with the National Youth Development Agency with the provision of 66 learners who will provide administration support to investigators in the provinces. This was launched by the Deputy Minister 2 weeks ago, as some of the members may be aware. Challenges in the provinces. Increasing workload as compared to 2019-20, the intake increased by 482 cases from 5,640 to 6,122. COVID-19 pandemic affecting investigation routine work with temporary closure of offices and quarantine of officials. The geographical area of 8 of the 9 provinces are vast, taking longer to attend crime scene and collect necessary evidence on cases under investigation. The next slide talks to investigation cases that have been investigated. We indicate the caseload there. For 2020-21, the caseload was, we had an intake of 6,122 cases. IPID had a total of 11,578 active cases as at the end of the financial year 2021 that were carried over into the new current financial year. Of the 11,758 current cases reported were mainly assaults with 7,820, followed by discharge of an official firearm with 1,635, death as a result of police action 994, torture 665, and other criminal misconduct matters at 184. Furthermore, IPID has a total of 23,187 cases of post-decision monitoring cases. These, Chairperson, are cases where investigation has been completed and IPID is still awaiting the decision of the NPA to decide to prosecute or not, or these are the cases that would be going through a court process that will go on the court roll, or in some instances, these are the cases that are with the police for disciplinary action. Therefore, the actual workload as at the end of March 2021 was 34,765. That is now the active cases and the post-decision ready monitoring cases. That would be the 11,000 and the 23,000 cases. Five provinces with the highest workload of both the active and the PDM cases are Gauteng with 8,782, followed by Western Cape with 7,205, followed by KwaZulu-Natal with 5,239, Eastern Cape with 3,762, and the Free State with 2,856 cases. The next slide, Chairperson, is a breakdown of the intake of cases that have indicated the 6,122 cases, which was the intake. In this slide, we show each province contribution to those cases. You will note that Western Cape was the highest with 1,224 cases contributing to 20% of the cases, followed by Gauteng with 1,082 cases contributing 18% of the total intake. The next slide. The next slide, Jefferson, talks to active cases under investigation as at the end of March 2021. We show in this slide, Chairperson, all the different categories of cases that investigate and the number of cases in each province that we have. In terms of the breakdown of those cases, you will see that death in police custody is 155 cases, death as a result of cases is 794 cases, discharge of an official firearm is 1,635 cases. Rape by police officials is 57 cases. Rape in custody is only one. Torture is 665 cases. Assault 7,820, which is the highest. Corruption 183 cases. Other criminal matters is 184 cases. Systemic corruption is 5 cases. And non-compliance with IPID Act, it's 79 cases. That gives a total of 11,578 cases, what I've alluded to earlier. And the next slide, Chairperson, talks to the total of post-decision ready monitoring cases, which I've indicated those are the cases where investigation is already completed, but they are going through other criminal justice processes. Your death cases, it's 1,378 cases. Death as a result of police action is 2,313 cases. Discharge of an official firearm is 2,851 cases. Rape by police officer is 631 cases. Torture is, or rape in police custody is 48 cases. Torture is 423 cases. Assault is 13,020 cases. Corruption is 798 cases. Other criminal matters is 1,490 cases. Systemic corruption is 10 cases. And non-compliance with IPID Act is 225 cases. The total thereof is 23,187 cases. The next slide, Chairperson, we reflect the total workload, as I've alluded to, that would be the active and post-incendiary cases. This shows the actual work that each IPED investigator would have on hand. The death cases would be 1,533 cases, and death as a result of police action is 3,107 cases. Discharge of an official firearm is 4,486 cases. Rape by a police official is 688 cases. Rape in police custody is 49 cases. Torture cases, 1,088 cases. Assault cases, 20,840 cases. Corruption cases is 981 cases. Other criminal matters is 1,674 cases. Systemic corruption would be 15 cases. And the non-compliance with IPED Act is 304 cases, which totals 34,765 cases. The next slide, Chairperson, talks to IPED's recommendation and level of compliance by SAPF. This slide, Chairperson, indicates the negative recommendations forwarded to SAPS for the financial year 2020-2021. You'll note that this is 702 cases, and it's comprised of 12 cases of death in custody, 62 cases of death as a result of police action, 75 cases of discharge of an official firearm, 30 cases of rape, one case of rape in custody, 477 cases of assault and torture, 18 cases of corruption, and other criminal matters is 8, and then 19 cases of non-compliance with the IPED Act. The next slide, Chairperson, shows the status of these cases. We show there that of the 702 cases, 135 of them were initiated, and 193 of them, there was a disciplinary outcome, and then 374 of those cases, Chairperson, IPED is still awaiting feedback from the police. And the positive recommendation is 1,518 cases. Now, Chairperson, when we speak about the negative recommendations, we refer to recommendations where we ask the police to discipline their members. So it's also the language that is used by SAPS. So it's negative discipline. We're saying our investigations has revealed that a member has committed a misconduct and therefore must be disciplined. Whereas a positive recommendation, Chairperson, is where our investigations have cleared a member of any wrongdoing. So the total of those cases, Chairperson, our negative recommendations, which is 702, and our positive recommendations, which is 1,518, the total thereof is 2,220 cases. The next slide, Chairperson, we reflect the disciplinary outcomes. These would be the disciplinary outcomes that also coming from previous years where we've made recommendations. Where members were found guilty, it's 145 cases. Where SAPS decided not to take any steps against their members, it's 138 cases. Where members were found not guilty, it's 91 cases, and 28 of those cases were withdrawn. The total is 403. The next slide, Chairperson, we reflect that IPED forwarded 2,220 recommendations to SAPS for the period 2020-2021, of which 702 was recommending disciplinary action and 1,518 recommending no disciplinary steps to be taken. In terms of the 702 recommendations forwarded, IPED received 328 initiations. That's where the police have initiated in terms of Section 30A of our Act, and 193 were completed in terms of Section 30 of our Act. The compliance thereof, Chairperson, stands at 47% of our recommendation, that is 328 out of 702 of the cases where we made negative recommendations. Chairperson, the next slide reflects the disciplinary feedback for the period 2020-2021, which is a total of 193 cases, as I've alluded to previously. It's comprised of 66 guilty, 185 where no steps were taken, 34 not guilty, and 8 withdrawn. Next slide. The next slide, Chairperson, that's where we give a breakdown of the 402 cases that I've alluded to earlier, which comes back from 2012-2021. This is a feedback of the outcome of those cases. And we reflect also from different provinces. Guilty is 145, no steps taken, 138, not guilty, 91, withdrawn 28. The total is 402. It also includes, as you can see there, the metros. The next slide. Next slide, Chairperson, will reflect on the guilty cases that are reflected, which was a feedback for the 2020-2021 financial year. And we flagged those guilty outcomes in terms of the different categories of cases. In terms of death, it was 2. Death as a result, 6. Discharge, 9. Rape, 3. Assault and torture, 41. And non-compliance with IPID Act, 5. Which took out 6 cases. The next slide, Chairperson, talks to the sanctions in relation to those 66 matters. You'll note that for the staff counseling, it was 4. Dismissal from the services was 6. Final written warning, it was 13. Salary suspension, it was 6. Verbal warning, it was 5. And written warning, it was 32. And total, 66. The next slide, Chairperson, talks to referrals forwarded to the NPA for the period April 2020 to March 2021. We show in terms of the quarters and the different provinces what was referred. You'll note that in the first quarter, it was 215 cases, second quarter, 348 cases, the third quarter, 776 cases, and the fourth quarter, 476 cases, which totals to 1,815 cases. Chairperson, you'll note that the province that referred the most cases was your Western Cape office with 445 cases, followed by Free State with 434 cases. The next slide. This slide, Chairperson, will reflect the status of the referrals of those cases within the financial year, where we are awaiting a decision. It's 1,405 cases, where a decision was made to prosecute. It's 35 cases, and decision where the DPP declined to prosecute is 369 cases, and then 6 of the cases were withdrawn, and gives a total of 1,850 cases. The next slide, Chairperson, we are asked to give an update on our mandate on discharge of an official firearm. And we indicate there, Chairperson, that the IP that is a total of 1,635 cases that were active at the end of 2020-2021 financial year, and these cases were mainly reported to IPID by SAPS and NPS. The next slide, Chairperson, is about working relationship with the military ombudsman. We indicate the chairperson that draft MOU which regulates the referral relationship is in place. However, the impact of the relocation of the national office in April and May and an ICT hampered communication with the external stakeholders. There's already a working relationship between IPT and the ombudsman, even though the MOU has not yet been finalized. The executive director will do the conclusion. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Sokos. Therefore, Honorable Minister, GM, and the Chairperson, in conclusion, it is expected that the amendment of the IP Act will be finalized in 2021-2022. Lack of resources will affect the implementation of the amended IP Act. And when we say there is lack of resources, it's because once the bill is being put into action, meaning when it becomes an act, we need more capacity where we are going to make sure that we get people to assist us in investigating cases from other law enforcement agencies that we've included in the act. Engagement with the Department of Health and Forensic Science Laboratories ongoing to fast track technical reports which will assist in completion of investigation. The department will continue relations with key stakeholders such as NYDA, the Provincial Community Safety, the Investigative Directorate, and others on sharing of resources. Next slide. I think this is how we're concluding our presentation, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. I just want to indicate that is the end of the presentation and I'm back from the engagement. Don't be surprised if you hear background noise. We just had to connect even before we could arrive at an office where we could properly engage with you because we didn't want to miss interacting with you. But thank you very much and thank you, Executive Director, and I hope you introduced yourself because this is your first engagement with the committee, and our apologies that we could not be here when you started with your presentation. But thanks, Chair, for the opportunity you have given us to present on IPT. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister.
Now that the GM is back, I have requested to be excused at 11, but I thought it would be real good if both were not here. Now, can I be excused?
You're welcome, Minister. You can be excused.
Thanks, Minister, for holding the fort.
Keep on fighting, GM.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Minister, for your presence and for the engagement with you. And we will
ensure that... making.
Okay. No, thank you very much, Minister. And I'm sure we will have future engagements with yourself in terms of the portfolios within your area. And you are relieved of this meeting. You're welcome to log off. Let me also thank the Executive Director and Mayor Chassin and the team for that in-depth presentation, but also for covering those aspects that we requested additional information on. I'm going to then request honorable members to raise their hands if they have any questions that they would like to ask. Let me start with the Honorable Nicolasi.
Thank you very much, Chair. I have a few questions for IPED, but before I start asking the questions, I am very concerned every year when we get the budget, it's very much the same story. The committee indicates that we are very concerned with the budget. It then gets cut the next year. We're still concerned. We say to each other, this is not right. But when the budget comes before the House or when the report comes, the committee in any case just accepts the budget. I really do think that we need to have an engagement with IPED and as a committee as well to see how do we get out of this vicious cycle, because it honestly cannot carry on like this. IPED does important work, and I think it's very important that they get capacitated in terms of finances, because all the rest will follow from that. That's just a comment. Then, Chairperson, if I look at the figures of how many cases are actually investigated by IPED, it's things like civilians dying at the hands of the police, being raped in police custody or by the police, being assaulted by the police. The figures do not reflect what is supposed to be normal in a democracy. Deputy Minister, I honestly think that not enough effort is being made to stop a culture of skopskiet en donor. We are not going to bring down the crime rates through a culture of skopskiet en donor. Obviously, the police have to be tough on crime, but we draw the line at deaths of civilians and rape of civilians at the hand of police. So I would like to know, firstly, from the Deputy Minister, what is being done about this culture of skopskiet en donor within the police service? Then my second question with regards to what we saw now was from the 702 matters that were referred back to the police for disciplinary actions, it was indicated that the compliance figure is 47%. That's 328 cases that were taken action on. Of the other 53%, I would like to know, why did the police not initiate disciplinary action yet? And of the 702, I see that only 193 were actually completed. That's only 28%. So why was 88% of the recommendations that IPED made for disciplinary action not completed? What is holding us back in that regard? Then my next question, Chairperson, is on slides, let me just go back. There's not a page number on this, but it's marked in the slides as 8.4. The heading is IPED recommendations, guilty outcomes. Now, if you count together the death in custody, death as a result of police action, and rape on or off duty together, the number is actually larger than the next slide, which gives you the figure for the number of police officers that were dismissed from their services. So in other words, not all the police officers that were found guilty of death in custody, death at the hands of police, and rape on or off duty, not all of them who were found guilty of those crimes were actually dismissed. So that means that there must be one or two or three or four or even a few more people who were found guilty of rape or murder that are still in the police force or in the police service. And I would just like to have a comment on that. Why have not all of them been dismissed? Chairperson, then just one or two other questions, and that is, I would like some feedback on the status of your case flow management system. I know that in the past your system has had quite significant challenges, and I would like to know what the status is with regards to that. And then just finally, in 2015, there were some recommendations made by the Farlam Commission on the forms used by IPED. Has this been implemented by you yet? And if not, can you please explain to us what the reasons for the delay there is? Chairperson, to give to other members a chance, I'm going to stop there. But I have a few more questions if there is a second round. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mr. Lucky. Honorable
Kuleko. Thank you, Chair. My apologies for my camera. I'm in the Gundus. But Chair, some of my question has been covered by my colleague, Mr. Mikalakis. But what I would like to know from the department, in terms of all the cases that have been referred, which was investigated by IPED, in terms of their success rate, Would the department say that they are actually happy in terms of their success rate, in terms of cases that has been referred for prosecution? And if the department is really happy in terms of that, in that regard. Also, Chair, there is also a question about some of the queries. The department states that the quality legal service will minimize queries from the prosecuting authority. Can the department provide examples of such queries, and how often do these queries occur? I think that'll be the only question, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Sector.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, after last week and the investigation that was done by Viewfinder, they exposed the top files and methods that police used to thwart IPED disciplinary recommendations against their members. Today, the research unit cites this report and says that the SAPs doing this lead to a culture of impunity on violent crimes, including torture, rape, and murder. So what is IPED doing to ensure that this systemic contempt by SAPs management for your recommendations is curbed? Because your monthly consultations with SAPs are obviously not working. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mteto.
Thank you very much, Chair. Maybe sometimes we raise question here and don't come back, Chair. May I firstly start by thanking the Deputy Minister in intervening on my matter that was raised in the previous meeting with Lieutenant General Leon. They've attended my Pinetown issue and we are working on it, Chair. So sometimes we don't report these things if it has been addressed. Thank you very much for that. For today, Chair, I've got one issue, Chair. If you look at the budget or at the PPP of the department, especially in the IPED, they still don't budget for offices. And sometimes it has been said that they are using even temporal containers as offices. When is this matter, especially in the minister, is it going to be addressed? Because I think it's got an impact on those positive cases if they don't have proper offices and they are working on the boot of the cars. When are these going to be addressed, and where is the really bottleneck of the IPED to have its own proper structural building that we know, such that some community can even walk into those offices? I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mustamai.
Thank you, Chair. Can I give you a little bit of IPED, especially more to saying more so this is a uniform yes ponies. But bothata ba budget ya ntwe na ba shota ka chelete ya o sebetsa mesebetsi ya bona ke batla the deputy minister mpotse gore go ka etswa jwang gore batho bana ba thole chelete e enough ya go kgona go tshwara ditsotsi tse di within the police. Ke a leboga.
Thank you, Honorable Matanai. Honorable Mkosi.
Thank you, Chairperson, for giving me the opportunity. I've got a few questions that I would like to ask. The first question is reflected on slide 19. Speaking of the youth development strategy and GBV and femicide strategy indicators, Chair, we are happy that with the prioritization of these issues and inclusion of these indicators. But what I would like to know the most is that can we be provided with more details on the implementation of this strategy and how its impact will be measured? My second question, Chair, is related with slide 20 to 23, investigation and information management program in 21 to 22. The majority of targets were decreased or remained unchanged. No targets were increased. Given that this is an important program in respect of fulfilling the IP's mandate, why have these targets decreased? What are the current backlog of cases by IP, and what is being done to remedy the situation? My other question is related to slide 33. We note a high number of vacancies for investigators in four provinces, specifically KZN, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and Gauteng. Surely the position of investigators is of paramount importance in the work of IPED. Can we be given a reason what is the contributing factor to delay these appointments and the impact these vacancies have on the investigatory function of the IPED? The other question that I have is indicated on slide 35, the IPED hotline. What monitoring mechanisms have been implemented to measure the effectiveness of this hotline? Has it resulted in more reporting? My last question, Chair, is indicated in slide 40. What are the underlying factors contributing to the high number of assaults and discharge of a firearm provincially? What is being done to address these on a provincial basis? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nkosi and Honorable Mendes, for the questions raised. I think you've covered some of my concerns. The Deputy Minister says there are also two issues that I'd like to raise on my side. And I think some of it also emanates from our previous engagement on the budget and APP in the last financial year, together with the Portfolio Committee. There were some recommendations or some issues that were raised at the time. And obviously we would want a response from yourself around this issue. The one was that IPED should develop a strategy to compile information regarding the behavior of police officers. This is the behavior that when they deal with their investigations, they identify this type of behavior and that they ensure that such information is shared with the SAT so that the department can then work towards improving police officers' compliance with the code of conduct. But obviously, I would imagine that the department would also probably look into appropriate training as well for the officers. The other recommendation that we made last year was that IPED also holds monthly meetings with the CSPS, the NPA, and SAT to review monthly stats in relation to the implementation of disciplinary recommendations that were forwarded to SAT and the cases that were referred to the NPA for prosecution. That being said, Deputy Minister, I think my other issues have been fairly well covered by other members, but I just would like to maybe just raise the two other matters. I think the one was raised around the compliance to recommendations by SAP and the Metro Police Service, and this is on slide 47. And I want to agree with the colleague that the 47% is quite low. If it could be indicated to what IPED is doing to address the issue of compliance with recommendations, and what monitoring and evaluating tools are being utilized to track the compliance with recommendations and the successful follow-up. And my final issue is that, you know, with regard to slide 53, where it is said that 369 referrals, where the NPA declined to prosecute cases. Can maybe we also be furnished with what are some of the main reasons? What are some of the main reasons that the NPA had advanced when it declined to prosecute in such cases? Let me then hand over to yourself, Deputy Minister, to then take us through the responses. Deputy Minister?
Thank you. Through you, Chair, I'll ask the Executive Director to respond first. Over to you, ED. If you permit, Chair.
Thank you, DM. I will be responding to these questions jointly with the National Head of Investigation, Mr. Sisoko. Maybe Mr. Sisoko, you can start, and then I will answer some of the questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and Deputy Minister. The Honourable Member first asked the questions, what is being done with the culture of scope, kit and donor. Chairperson, in terms of our mandate, ours it's more reactive in terms of investigating the alleged criminality and misconduct by the police. We do, however, have regular engagements with them, and in previously we had even made recommendations which are of a policy nature in terms of issues that we've picked up when we do our statistical analysis. Now, it now behoves of the police now to look at these issues that we raise with them so that they, from their side, do a management intervention to deal with those issues. For instance, one of the questions asked is, why did the police not initiate 53% of cases where we made negative recommendations? Now, we do have regular meetings with the SAPS, both at national and at provincial level, Chairperson. The difficulty is that when we engage with the police, especially at national office, sometimes they would come with a spreadsheet and say, no, actually we have implemented 100% of your recommendations. We have done initiations and so forth. Our difficulty is that when we always communicate this to the police to say, you cannot come with a spreadsheet to us and say you have initiated when we have not received any communication from the provinces where you've written to the provinces and said, this is how we dealt with this specific matter and this has been the outcome of this specific matter. You might have seen also in the slides that are presented where, for instance, you have cases where we say they respond and say they did not take any disciplinary, they didn't take any steps against their members. We've had engagements also with them in relation to this. Section 30 of our Act is very clear, and it's peremptory in nature, that when we recommend that you take disciplinary action, you must initiate. If you have issues with the recommendation that we have made to you, rather engage with us and inform us what are the issues that you may be having with our recommendations. And we will consider whatever you are raising. And if we are in agreement with you, we may even review the recommendation. But you cannot unilaterally decide that you are not going to take any steps without engaging with us. So those are still some of the challenges that the SAPS, and we've engaged with them, and the management has indicated that they will deal with these issues. But unfortunately, some of them are still occurring, as you can see from our statistical information. And then the other question the honorable member asked is why the police did not dismiss in some of these death cases. Again, honorable member, we don't get involved ourselves in the disciplinary processes of the SAPS. They conduct the disciplinary process on their own, and they appoint their own initiators and their chairperson who deal with these matters, and they conclude those on their own. And we're not even invited in most cases in those disciplinary actions. Sometimes we will be called as witnesses, but we are not necessarily, as a matter of course, called to say we must be present to be part of that. Some of the discussions we've been having when we were discussing the IPIT amendment bill was also to look at the possibility that when SAPS implement our recommendation, they must also look at inviting us in those processes so that we're part of that, to see if they in fact deal with them as per our recommendations. Honorable Suleku asked if we help with the non-prosecution of cases. And we've indicated that we've got a target that talks to the analysis of the referrals to the NPA, where we also check whether the decision of the NPA is in accordance with what we think is right. Remember that the NPA makes their own decisions independently on prosecution. I must indicate that in most cases we agree with the decisions of the NPA. And also this must be understood against the background that when we investigate the police, it's not like investigating an ordinary citizen. You're dealing with people who understand the criminal justice system and how it works. And then they often have ways of hiding their tracks. So sometimes it's difficult to get evidence that will ensure prosecution of their cases. The honorable member also asked what kind of queries we make. So for instance, in some of the cases where we receive the decisions from SAPS, I mean from the NPA or even SAPS, would make representations, especially with the NPA, where we feel very strongly that a matter should have been prosecuted and they've decided not to prosecute. I think it's also important to highlight that the bar used by the NPA is beyond a reasonable doubt. So sometimes most of the answers we get is that there are no prospects of a successful prosecution in those cases where they declined to prosecute. So where we made queries, we'll make representations. Sometimes representations are successful, sometimes are not successful. So it depends on a case-by-case basis. We have had cases where we've made representations and then they've changed the decision and they decide to prosecute. We've had cases where we've made representations and they still maintain the decision not to prosecute. It must also be understood that sometimes even our suspects, police members, also make representations where the NPA had decided to prosecute, and they'll make representation why they should not be prosecuted. And sometimes they'll be successful in those representations, and the NPA will maybe decide after those representations not to prosecute. And sometimes also they will be unsuccessful. On the question of the Falun Commission recommendation and the amendment of the forms, honourable member, I think we have not implemented that. We must concede to that. Our winning statement forms are still the same, even though when you warn a person, you do, and our investigators do indicate to the suspect their rights in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act as well as the IP Act. And where we conduct interviews with members of the police, we also inform them of their rights in terms of Section 24 of the IP Act, that when we've called them to give us information on any other matter that you're investigating, we may not use some of the information that they give us as provided for in the Act. However, we note that I think this matter is a matter that I will give an urgent attention, that with our legal services department, to ensure that we implement. But it does not detract from the fact that these rights that are accruing in terms of the Criminal Procedure and the IP Act are always, members are always made aware of as and when we do these investigations. Honourable Faisal asked what we're doing to ensure the implementation of our recommendations. I think it's important to indicate that the engagements that we have with the police are aimed at doing that, to try and push for the police to implement our recommendations. And I must indicate the engagements that happen both at national and provincial are very robust in terms of trying to get them to implement. But it's important also to note, Honourable Member, that the Civilian Secretariat Act places also an obligation on them to monitor compliance of the SAPS with our recommendation and make reports to the Minister in relation to this. So at our consultative forum, we also discuss these issues, which is also provided for in our Act, where we discuss these issues. And the Civilian Secretariat would then do reports to the Minister indicating the issues of non-compliance by SAPS. Honourable Mteto asked about the IPED offices. Honourable Mteto, we have offices which are proper buildings where our offices are in all 9 provinces. We also have a number of satellite offices, some of which were procured by IPED itself, some of which we received as a result of negotiations with sister department, where they are accommodating us in those offices. We are continuously trying to access further offices in discussion with MECs in different provinces to try and other sister departments, like the Department of Justice, to try and get as many offices as possible where we can be accessible. It must be noted, however, that this also must be looked at in conjunction with the capacity that we have in terms of the investigators that we have to be able to mend those offices. Honorable Zamai asked, what are we, okay, this one is for the DM, what is the DM doing to assist IP with the budget? Honorable Nkosi ask about what informed the decrease in our targets. Honourable Member, here when we do our strategic planning sessions, first we have to look at what resources we have. So we'll have to look at the number of investigators we have that must do the work that we are required to do. We look at the budget that we have, which will enable us to do the work. As our acting CFO has indicated that we have had budget cuts. So our targets must also be aligned to those kinds of budget cuts, because we cannot target more than what we are capable of doing in terms of the resources. With regard to delays in filling of posts, we have indicated in the slide that the issues relating to reprioritization of posts to try and get more positions impacted on this, because the processes involved also include getting approvals from our minister as well as the DPSA and so forth. So those kind of processes also contributed to the delay. However, the process is underway now to fill those posts. And then there was a question with regard to assault cases, what contributes to the high number of cases. It's not clear and dry. In some instances, it's just pure brute by members of the SAPS, where they just assault members of the public, and we deal with those cases accordingly. In some instances, you get cases of reported assaults where members of the SAPS are interacting with members of the public, or where they are effecting arrests, and a member of the public will then complain that there was an assault in that in the process of that arrest. Sometimes cases are of assault are opened as a way of trying to detract from the case that the police may be investigating. So we also have sometimes those kind of cases. The chairperson asked about sharing of data with SAPS and the monthly meeting that is happening. Chairperson, we do share data with SAPS. In fact, on a monthly basis, after we've done our internal processes with regard to our recommendations, we send reports to the Minister of Police. We send reports to the Secretary of Police. We also send reports to the National Commissioner of Police. And then at the provincial level, there are also those engagements to look at these recommendations and to check if we have the same numbers in terms of recommendations, and also to look at the implementation. With regard to monitoring the compliance, those processes are meant exactly to do that, to monitor the compliance, and would raise these issues with the SAPS in terms of our unhappiness where we find that there's not been a compliance with our recommendations at that level. But also our reports that goes to the Secretariat is to alert the Secretariat the extent to which there's been compliance, so that they can engage in their own processes and make the report to the Minister to advise that the extent to which the SAPS is complying with our recommendations. Honourable Chair also asked what are the reasons for the NPA to decline to prosecute. I think I've dealt with it in my previous discussion. Safe to add that the NTA normally when they make a decision, they will just say they are declining to prosecute without giving your reasons. So we would normally, in cases where we feel very strongly that we don't agree with their decision, we would ask for the decision, reason why they are declining to prosecute, and also make representation where we think it's important to make those representations, that that decision must be reviewed. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Mr. Soko. Let me also address a question by a Honorable Member Mikalakis on the CMS, the status with regards to that. We will be going out on tender on procuring a new system that will work exactly the same way as the other one, but with enhanced features to make sure that it captures what we want that system to capture. So there will be a tender with regards to a new system that we want to assist us in dealing with some of the challenges that we are currently experiencing. And then the other question was raised by Honorable Mem Nkosi with regards to the strategies that we have developed. She clearly indicates that we must detail as to what exactly are we doing there. One, with regards to the youth development strategy, we are working very closely with the NYDA to implement a learnership, call it a learnership, where we have opened doors to young people to assist IPIT with admin work, which is a major nightmare for our own investigators. So already we've got 66 learners who are onshore, who are working in all the provinces to assist us in with administration, so that investigators must then do investigation and not focus on administration, because that's the major part of the work. And then with regards to the gender-based violence and femicide, we've already started launching it at Free State. Now what we're doing is that on a monthly basis, we then generate stats in relation to rape, torture and assault. And we are submitting those statistics to say how many women are involved in the process. And every month we have to make sure that we give a report to the president about the work that we are doing in relation to the investigation on those identified targets. And then with regards to toll-free number, monitoring of the toll-free number, we've only launched our toll-free number in October, Chairperson. I think maybe we want to give it a year just to see what are the challenges. Do we receive a high number of cases? But there's also another thing that we're going to be doing. We've got a drive to engage in outreach programs and engagement with different sectors of the communities to encourage the reporting of cases, because we know that there are people who are sitting there not knowing what to do. So we will, for this financial year, we'll make sure that we go out and engage communities through outreach programs, through stakeholder engagement, as well as the station lectures that we will be conducting, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, ED, Mr. Sisoko, for the responses you have given. There is an issue that was raised by Honorable Mikalakis and Honorable Motamai, even though the context are not necessarily the same. This had to do with the budget cuts, and I think Honorable Mikalakis was saying maybe there might be a need for further engagement around these issues, and Honorable Mutamai was how can you resolve this problem? I think we should all agree that we are experiencing serious economic challenges as a country and the world over. Our economy have been impacted severely by the COVID-19 pandemic. And as COVID-19 struck our shores, it struck our shore when we were already experiencing an economic decline with the rating agencies, categorizing the categorization of South Africa by the rating agencies was not good. So the economic decline and the COVID impact have severely affected our ability to collect money because the economy was sluggish. And as a consequence of that, there have been a budget cut that was across government as a whole. The money that we had and the money that we wished we could have were not the same. And as a result, we had to cut a budget across government, and the South African police family was affected. And this has also impacted on IPIT. And we had to make do with what we have currently. And we believe, despite the fact that we are saying the cut is going to affect our ability to work, this does not mean that we are not going to do our work. We are going to carry out our responsibility. As a committee, we are appearing before you, presenting to you the resources that have been allocated. You have a responsibility as a committee to also make your contribution. And of course, your contribution in the form of supporting that, yes, we agree with what you are presenting, but we think you must have more. And it is within the powers of the committee to decide to ask for more funds for IPED, because based on your own analysis and understanding, you can arrive at that determination. But we are saying this is what the kit has in the country, and it's a cut across of government as a whole. And if I was a magician, I would obviously will have changed the money that the national fiscals have to be more. But I believe this is just but a phase which we shall pass, because COVID is not going to be with us forever. Last year, we were in a complete lockdown. Currently, many factories are opening up, and already there are signs, positive signs, that yesterday will not be like tomorrow. And I'm quite certain that it will ultimately impact on the allocations for the coming years. What do we do with the culture that we have inherited? I think this is a responsibility that or a response that requires society as a whole to respond to, including the select committee. Honorable members have a role to play. Currently, there is a campaign, a negative campaign out there, which projects police as people that must be bashed, even in instances where there is criminality conducted by criminals and sometimes some sections of the community. For instance, there is an incident where there was mob justice, which was done by the community. The police are asked, where were the police when this thing happened? And there's no question that is being asked, where was society generally when things like this happen? Because we have community members who engage in act of criminality, which they are not supposed to do. So it's a broad challenge that needs all of us to come to the table to contribute towards ensuring that this culture of scope, skit, and donor is dealt away with, because this is a culture that was brought by the society that we inherited. And our responsibility is to re-educate. As the South African Police Service, we are engaged in programs at an inception at the college where we are teaching the new recruits on the culture of human rights, on the constitution of the republic, so that people are trained as officers who must come and do policing in the context of a culture where human rights are respected. The majority of our police officers are conducting themselves in line with the constitution of the republic that has in it the human rights enshrined within the constitution. So we have police officers who are adhering to this. Unfortunately, you have some within the South African police who behave in a manner that is not in keeping with the culture of human rights. And we have a responsibility to continuously re-educate our police officers. And we are doing exactly that as the leadership, as the political leadership of the South African Police Service and the top management of SAPS and our police officers in general. Because we are certain that professionalizing the police will need all heads on deck, including IPED. IPED is not only an institution that is looking for wrongdoing. IPED is an institution that must also, and it is, contributing towards ensuring that police officers conduct themselves in a manner that is in keeping with the constitution of the republic. I say sometimes when we interact with the executive director that the more she does her work quite effectively, the more the IPED will become irrelevant, because police will no longer be afraid of IPED, but they will have internalized the culture of human rights. And once this is done, IPED needs to exist, will cease to be there. So IPED have a role to play also in this regard, and the committee has a role to play, society has a role to play, and all of us, we have a responsibility to interact in such a manner that we contribute towards this positive image that the police must have, but also through our interaction with police in whatever form, to encourage this type of behavior which is desirable of our police officers. And in that way, we'll be making our own contribution towards professionalization of the South African Police Service. And I can say, Chair and members of the committee, this is possible and is achievable. We can do so in our lifetime. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Deputy Minister and the Executive Director and all officials who have made responses. Members, I just want to verify if you have any follow-up questions. If there is none, if there is no follow-up question, let me once again thank you also, Minister, for trying to contextualize some of these issues broadly. But I think the engagement that we had with the IPED as well as with the civilian secretaries earlier was quite a constructive engagement. And let us thank you and IPED for this presentation on the APPM badges. As well as the new executive director, Mian Chasen, let us wish you well in your role of managing the important work of IPED. And the work that IPED has is very important and also plays an important role also in terms of improving confidence in the police service. Deputy Minister, while we acknowledge the continued budget constraints of IPED, we would like to encourage IPED to continue its important work in investigating identified criminal offences allegedly committed by members of the South African Police Services and the Metro Police Service, and to make the appropriate recommendations as they do, as well as to ensure the compliance of those recommendations and to monitor these. We also want to further encourage IPED as well, given the budgetary environment we find ourselves in to also find more innovative ways, you know, to strengthen their reach within provinces to ensure that ACID continues to fulfill its mandate. Let me once again thank the department and wish ACID well in its endeavors to meet the APP targets within the current budgetary constraints. Let me also thank you, honorable members, for your engagement on the budget and APP. Like I said earlier, this was a very constructive engagement. And with that being said, thank you very much, Deputy Minister and the team. I declare this meeting.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
You are muted when you declared, you wanted to declare the meeting, but you couldn't say it closed because you were muted, Chair.
You know, no
that's
problem.
Why, that's why. So thank you.
No, thank you very much, everybody. The meeting is closed.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.